We're the Tri-State Sports Guys. I'm Mike DePalma. Alongside my co-host, Danny Santarella. We got Coach Ireland in the studio working the board. Tony D, I'm assuming, is still scuba diving or whatever he was doing in that picture today. Just crushing beers.
Scuba diving while looking for a house.
Yeah.
At the same time.
That dude's a busy guy.
He's the best.
But a lot to get to. As we talked about on the website today, we talked about last week a little bit of debate. We kind of got morphed into just the Pete Rose show.
Yeah.
And just to touch on Pete Rose quickly, I don't know. Right after he did our show, he did like a whirlwind media tour.
That's the kind of thing we do. We're like a trampoline.
We kicked it off, yeah. But it ended with both me and Anthony. Did you have
that? I looked at that clip.
It was.
It's Rich Voss.
Yeah, but the whole interview was great.
I always love that clip.
It made me think, like, when I watched him on, like, Boomer Carton, I heard listening to him on ESPN Radio, I'm like, yeah, well, our show, we did a good job. And you hear what Andy, and it's so, I mean, obviously not Andy anymore, but Jimmy was there, and Opie, and Voss, and Ricky Gervais was there. Dude, it was so funny. I listened to it twice, the whole thing. I mean, he probably was on for, like, 10 minutes, and they were playing clips all day today. So, that was a good experience, but that kind of took away from our format thing, just to open shows with a debatable topic, not something that's going to be just in the now kind of debate, something that can even go back and listen to 6 months from now and still be a relevant debate. So this week's debate is, does LeBron James make the Cavaliers a championship team in his tenure? And now we don't know. I mean, he's only guaranteed to be there 1 year. He signed a 2-year deal. He could opt out. We don't know how long he'll be there. You would think that after everything he said, he's going to be there for a long haul. But that's going to be our debate. So we're going to be joined shortly by a friend of the show, Akron Zips head coach and former LeBron James High School coach, Keith Danbrock. We've had him on before. Real good guy. You weren't in the studio. Real good guy. So I'll let you kind of run the ship on that one because you can just rap about Mac basketball.
Yeah. Of course.
There are some questions I want to get to with him, so we're going to be joined by him very shortly. I think that for a guy 4 years ago, with the decision and how hated he was the moment after the decision, he slowly worked his way back into this public, love, and this was just I honestly think he's now as beloved as he was. Do you think, I don't know if he could ever gain what he was when in his first 3 or 4 years in the league, but do you think that he's gained back all of what he had before he went?
I think he gained respect back. I think he will get all the cachet that comes with it if he's able to win there. I think that's the thing we've talked about, you and I, a bunch of times, Neil, we've all thought about it. If he just won one in Cleveland, I think it would be more valuable to his image than if he won 6 in Miami. He wants to stockpile like Kobe and like Tim Duncan and like Michael Jordan and Magic and Bird and all that. But winning one title in Cleveland, that's why, I vacillated back and forth on what I think about our debate topic, and I'm not necessarily sold. I guess I could argue it either way. But I hope, I really do hope, because I don't really have an NBA team, I hope he can pick one up there in Cleveland, because I think it would be absolutely enormous for that city that's been, the decision, the fumble, the drive, all the stuff that they've gone through. I think it'd be great, but yeah, I mean, for me now, I'm going to be rooting for him again. I wasn't in Miami, so for me, it's cool. I'm excited to see what he can do there. You got to love Kyrie Irving. Deion Waiters looks like he's going to be a player. You don't know what they're going to do with Wiggins.
Yeah.
Kevin Love there in the background, just stuff with the Twins.
Bears out, my man.
Bears out.
Healthy, he's a double-double.
Yeah. Where am I? And you look at that and you go, your question was very interesting. So on our Facebook page, did it influence any internal knowledge they had of getting LeBron, because it was who they drafted. And I have some thoughts on that.
Yeah.
That I'll be interested to get into as we go forward tonight. But certainly for me, who I haven't been a LeBron hater, I hated his decision to go to Miami. I'm going to be all on board now with Cleveland. I hope that city, if you've ever been there, it's not the worst place in the world, like people say.
People do say.
They say that, but it's not a bad city. It's a great sports town. So I hope they can do something for me. It'll be very interesting to see what he can, put together. And again, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, but the whole Kevin Love thing, if that comes to fruition, obviously it moves them up the ladder, in terms of what they can do. Are we joined by the great Neil Lynch right now?
We are right now, so I'm patching in. Me and Coach Jai are patching in the whole Boca studio right now. But Neil Lynch, how you doing, my man?
I'm holding in there. I'm holding tight. We've had some really rainy days up here in Hoboken. I don't know if it affected Connecticut, but I'm good. It's good to be dry now.
No, I've been bone dry up here in Connecticut. I don't know. It's a whole different weather system down there in Roebuck. So let's start with you then. I like the way this works out because we like to start with you. We're going to be joined by Coach Dan Brott in a little bit, but why don't we just start our debate now while we're waiting for him to join us. First, before you even give your opinion on it, I mean, what did you think of the signing? Did it surprise you, A? And does it change your opinion about LeBron at all? I don't think you're a LeBron hater so much. So what did you think about it? Were you excited? Did you think it's a cool move or what?
I mean, it is. It's you want to root for Cleveland, like Dan said, just because they've gone through such misery for so long. So in a way, I'm happy to see them get back. But it's also kind of pathetic the way they acted. You know, I mean, they were so bitter when he left, burning jerseys. They're now selling the ashes of the burnt jerseys on eBay and Amazon or whatever. So in a way, it's good to see that they got something back, and that, you know, now that they have Johnny Manziel in the mix, you know, Cleveland's a hot topic. It's the place to be right now because all the superstars are going there, and if they can get Kevin Love on board somehow, some way, they're a shoo-in for the finals. I don't know about winning it, but they're a shoo-in to get there. But you know, it was just kind of sad to see Cleveland all of a sudden. You know, they're now going nuts to get him back, and all is forgiven, and it was a weird, I had mixed feelings about it, you know, because it's all of a sudden like he went to the dark side with Miami, and he was, you know, Darth Vader protege, and then all of a sudden he comes back to Cleveland, and he's Luke Skywalker. It's just, you know, all of a sudden it's like when one fell swoop, people can now look up to him as a hero or an icon again. And you know, maybe he was taking his toll, you know, all the abuse that he was taking in Miami, you know, he was a sellout and a mercenary or whatever. Maybe it took its toll on him and started going down. He started to think about his roots, and he really decided that he needed to be home. But to turn around a team in one season, I mean, few people can do that. Peyton Manning did that with the Broncos. But a lot of people would say that the Broncos had talent, and then Peyton just, you know, was able to surface that talent and make it better. I mean, I don't know that LeBron can really put Cleveland on his shoulders and win in that first season. I'm saying if their best shot is probably that second year of the deal.
Yeah, I think, a couple of things I want to get to that you mentioned, but just for, you know, your last part, I do think out of all the major sports, basketball is the one that will most be impacted by a superstar. You know, like you mentioned, like, you know, you get a good quarterback in there, but he's got no surrounding pieces. You know, there's nothing you can do. Baseball, clearly, you bring Miguel Cabrera over to the Mets, they're still not winning World Series. But in basketball, you get him, and you're going to elevate the play around him and, you know, be able to put up buckets and play defense and the rest. So I think that basketball does lend itself to have a superstar come in and turn around a franchise really quickly. But to your point about the Cleveland fans, I completely get that. But I will say I would be a hypocrite if when there was the rumor that Darrell Revis, who I have come on these airwaves many times and talked about how much I just can't stand that guy, the way he left and the way he held the team hostage every offseason and all the rest, I was very excited about the possibility of Darrell Revis coming back to the Jets. So I completely sympathize with the Cleveland fans. Does that make me a hypocrite? I mean,
no,
maybe it does, but I'm just being honest. Of course.
You weren't in the street. You were wearing jerseys and stuff like that. And, you know, when Neil was talking about it, I was thinking to myself, you know, and I know it's different, but, you know, we've talked about Jared Allen. Jared Allen's on his way to Canton. When he left to go to the Bears, I was annoyed by it, but I go, okay, whatever. No, I didn't burn anything.
Well, anybody that burns jerseys for any reason.
Yeah, but that's,
he kills his mother.
That's what's so stupid to me. That if Adrian Peterson went to the Packers, I would just dislike Adrian Peterson for the rest of my life. But I'm not going to burn anything. I'm not going to go on chat boards and chat rooms and stuff like that and curse his name or whatever. You know, you get over it. In terms of LeBron, I think you touched on it a little bit, Mike. The first thing he does, a player like him, a guy like Durant, a guy like, you know, Chris Paul or Steve Nash in his prime, he brings every player on that team up a peg. So when you look at how good Kyrie Irving has been, when you look at what Deion Waiters could be or what Anderson Varejao could be or even Anthony Bennett or whatever, everybody's going to go off the peg because he's a selfless team guy. But I do think in terms of winning a championship this year, everything's kind of going to hinge on what they do with Kevin Love. And if your question might be, you asked on our Facebook page, did the internal knowledge affect the drafting of Andrew Wiggins? And I would say no, because to me, if you wanted to win now, the immediate fit would have been Jabari Parker to me.
And he's a better fit with LeBron.
Yeah, and plus the fact, you know, you're going to hear detractors say that they're similar built, similar type games. Obviously, Parker is not James, but I don't think so, because I think, you know, you draft Parker and look to ship him to a deal to Minnesota, he's the more NBA-ready player. So I don't know if Minnesota's looking to do a deal now where they take Rubio and now they say, you know, let's put Wiggins with him, because you're still not winning anything. That's the thing. You're not winning anything out west. You're not going to do anything. So I don't know if that's the case, but I do know that if they could get Kevin Love into Cleveland and you put him on the pivot with LeBron on the wing, Kyrie Irving at the point, you immediately have this, what's become so cliche now, this big three that is – just as good, if not better than what anyone has anywhere in the league.
Yeah.
So that, to me, is the big question mark. Can they get Kevin Love? And if they do, and the thing that people talk about with Kevin Love, and they kind of bounce around it a little bit, but it's so true for someone like me that loves the game and loves watching the little thing, he has that Tim Duncan game for, in terms of getting you in transition, he does the baseball pass over the top. And I remember hearing, watching the UCLA game when he was there for a year, and Marcus Johnson, who was a former player there, said he reminds him of Wes Unseld. And I always had heard stories about Unseld's great outlet passes, length of the court passes. So he gets you in the transition. He's selfless. He's a good passer, pivot, and the high post. So that move would immediately make them winners. But if they don't bring in Kevin Love, short of bringing in Kevin Durant, I don't know who they could get that would immediately make them winners. I saw they signed James Jones. They signed Mike Miller. I love seeing shooters put around superstars, so that's a good start. But you're still going to need some internal play, and if Barrett's not healthy, I don't know where you get that from. And I don't know if LeBron is the kind of player like Jordan that would win without some kind of inside force. In Miami, he at least had Bosh, he at least had Haslam, he at least had the Birdman, and like some different parts that could do some things inside. So if Barrett's not healthy, I don't know where they go.
Yeah.
They'll make the playoffs,
yeah,
but I don't know how far they'll go.
And I don't know their bench well enough. I know that they lost, you know, Dak. And
there's nobody.
And
I looked the other day. They lost,
you know, you lose a guy like Zeller, who's not like he's a superstar, but he's a
solid
player. Yeah, he's like, type of guy. He'd give you minutes. He could do some things defensively. He could do some things offensively, rebound. I do think that the length of the rotation is going to be pretty slim, and they're going to need – they're going to make a real run at the championship this year without Kevin Love, just as the Red Rocks is constituted right now. They're going to need Anthony Bennett to be not just a guy who every once in a while can get 6-7 points. He's going to have to average 8 to 10 a game and 6 to 8 rebounds a game, right? I mean, Neil, is there anything you saw? I don't know how much Anthony Bennett you saw, other than like the lap reels at the beginning of the season about him being pudgy and out of shape and to do nothing. He had a couple glimpses where he looked like an NBA player. Do you have any kind of insight on Anthony Bennett? I mean, can this guy be a real contributor on a playoff team or a championship team?
No, I have no idea.
Well, that's good. I like the honesty here.
Yeah, I think the first thing about that is I watched some of Bennett at UNLV. I saw a little bit of him last year. Like I said, LeBron will bring everybody up a notch. The question becomes with a young kid like Bennett or even with Andrew Wiggins, who I'm much more familiar with, it'll be, can they play with him? I mean, he will bring your game up a notch if you know what you're doing, but the question becomes, is it too much pressure, in a way, for the likes of Wiggins and Bennett, and even a kid like Waiters? I think Irving will be absolutely fine. He looks like a superstar. So I don't know what those young guys will do. That's another point to the drafting of Wiggins. I think Parker, just guessing here, that's all it really is, just my guesswork, but Parker probably would have been more suitable. He looks like he has the more mature game to have fit immediately with LeBron. And you take a situation like Parker with the Cavs, if he was there, you play a kid like him on the three, LeBron's so versatile, you could play him probably anywhere 1-5. So you put, you know, Irving with James and Parker, and you get some inside game, because LeBron, it's another, LeBron can play the four like a four.
Yeah.
You know, he can be that post player for you also. So with Wiggins now, from watching what I watched with him in Kansas, and again, it was only 30-plus games 1 year, I don't know if he has the makeup, the mindset, to do the things necessary to play with an uber star like LeBron. But it'll be interesting if they don't make the pickup of Love. It'll be interesting to see what Wiggins does, you know. So that's my take. I'm not sure, but he looks like he's a little bit skittish at times.
Well, Neil, can you give us anything on Wiggins? Because, I mean, Dan has clearly seen him way more than we have. And I like to think that even as a Kansas fan, he gives us an objective view. I don't think it's any secret that he would live up to the astronomical hype that he had. The guy was a legitimate threat at the collegiate level last year and clearly showed enough to go to number one overall. At worst, he was going to go two or three. So from what you saw from him at Kansas, I mean, is he a guy that could that's going to take a couple years to develop? You know, it even took Kobe Bryant a while to develop into the player he was. And it is, they got LeBron James now. You know, they don't need, they don't want to see, they don't want to sign their first-round pick and have to give you, you know, 12 to 18 minutes a game.
Well, I know he can jump through the roof, and he's throwing down nasty dunks in the summer league right now. So that's a good sign, I guess, if you're into, you know, impressive physical feats. But you know, I think if LeBron's not there, it's a different ball game. And you know, that was a if I remember correctly, Cleveland was kind of a toxic environment last year. So for Wiggins to go in and into that toxic environment, you know, without LeBron James, I mean, his career, you know, might have taken a serious detour. But I think with LeBron there now, and if you add maybe one more player into the mix, you know, it certainly bring on Mike Miller. I don't know what kind of leadership skills he has, but he's a veteran that can at least talk to Wiggins, or Wiggins can bounce ideas off. But I don't know what – I don't know the makeup, the personality makeup of Andrew Wiggins. I just know that he's a physical specimen. But, you know, if I had to guess, you know, he's probably going to listen to James because he grew up watching him. I mean, that's, you know, there's no way better way to command respect than to have a guy like James in the locker room. Even if he's not a vocal leader, just watching him play the way that he prepares will help him tremendously.
Let me ask you this, Dan, and maybe Neil can answer this too. You've been to Cleveland. I've never been to Cleveland, but what kind of town is Cleveland as far as a sports town? Would you, I mean, they haven't won a championship since when, the 60s.
I think it was 50s or 60s when Jim Brown was winning the NFL championship.
So that's, early 60s maybe?
World Series was, what, 48?
Yeah.
48, actually.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of Major League. It was 47 or 48. So is it would you classify Cleveland right now as a basketball town, football town, or a baseball town? In my mind, I still see them as a football
town. Yeah, it's a football town.
Ohio high school football
big. I don't see any question. I think it's a football town. And, you know, conversely, I think Cincinnati, you know, down there in Southern Ohio, it's a baseball town. It's always struck me that way. I think it's much more of a Reds town than it's ever going to be a Bengals town. And a lot of that has to do with the fact that the Reds have won a lot of World Series and the Bengals have never done anything sort of get to a Super Bowl. But, to me, Cleveland is a football town. You know, you see the 400 or 500, whatever it was, I think 455 straight sell-ups at Jacobs Field and all that stuff that they had. They supported the Cavs when LeBron was there, which, you know, who the hell wouldn't? I mean, who wouldn't support, what city wouldn't support LeBron James if he was playing there? So, you have all those things going. Just, you know, my thoughts with Wiggins, my last thing, I think LeBron will help him. But Wiggins has a kind of a mindset where he will move into the background, kind of. He did it in college, and it always
irked. Kind of a perfect fit.
It irked the hell out of me when he did it in college. Because I'm like, you know, you're the best player on the court. Then they went to West Virginia, put up 40-some-odd points, and they lost. But he finally showed it. Look, he has trouble in traffic. He has the high dribble. His mid-range game, I like. I know there's people that knock it. I like it. He can get better from deep. He can get better going to the rim, even. With LeBron in the mix and with Kyrie Irving, I'm assuming those two handling the ball the lion's share of the time. I mean, he's probably not going to have to worry about dribble driving to the basket all that often because he'll probably be getting the ball off the break with those guys. So it could help him. But then again, I don't know. He kind of has this I'll play the Robin role instead of Batman, like in his mindset. So maybe that'll help because he's not going to have to be Batman there. He's going to have to play a second or third, fourth role, whatever. If they bring in, you know, any other really solid players, he's going to be probably fifth or sixth, which could help him. It could help him get his feet wet. You've got to remember, I mean, the kid's 19. That's the other thing. I mean, we put so much pressure on these guys. Even Bennett, I think, is 20 or 21. So, you know, we put so much on these guys, but there's very few LeBron Jameses and Kobe Bryants and Moses Malone that just come in and do things. That's very rare. So Wiggins could certainly be the beneficiary of playing with the world's best player, I think.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting. I mean, because if he gets shipped to Minnesota, we'll see a different Wiggins because he'll have to do a lot more with there.
Turn the keys over to you. Well, Neil, if you agree with Dan's assessment and my assessment, it is a football town. Let me ask you this question. Say Johnny Manziel lives up to the hype, and they go to the, you know, they're in the, you know, the conference championship game this year. Is it possible that LeBron James could be the second biggest star in his town? I mean, does Manziel have that kind of potential? They're not the biggest star in the country as far as just, you know, of the four major sports. If you think of it as a football town, the Browns haven't been good in a long time. And if this guy comes in as the savior and gets the moxie and he brings them to the playoffs and deep in the playoffs, I'm not even talking about a Super Bowl run. And they both get back out from wherever they neither of them win championships. Can Johnny Manziel unseat LeBron James as the biggest star in Cleveland? Is that possible?
Absolutely. I mean, you're saying conference championship. If you're conference championship, there's no question in my mind. He'll be the talk not of town but of the country and the world. But if he can merely get the Browns to the playoffs, he might be bigger than LeBron James.
What do you think about that, Manny? You can just say a playoff run, just getting knocked out in the first round, wild card bird for Cleveland Browns, and then a trip to the NBA Finals, but a lost NBA Finals for the Cavaliers this time next year. Is the town Johnny Manziel's town? Probably would be, because it would be a disappointment for a Cleveland Cavaliers fan.
I mean, the first thing I think when I first consider this kind of thing you're laying out in front of me here, the Browns are going to be the biggest thing in town. If they can do and reach any of the heights you're discussing, it's going to be about the Browns. I think the fans there are still going to know. But those are good sports fans. No, it's a three-sport town. They understand what they have there. LeBron's the biggest thing. Johnny Manziel's going to have to turn to Joe Montana to really.
I don't think he's a better player.
No,
I'm saying,
no matter what happens, if the Browns do anything great under anybody's watch, whoever's under center, it's going to be a Browns. That's all you're going to hear about is the Browns. The Browns are great. I don't think, short of Jim Brown coming back himself, I don't think you're going to see anybody overtake LeBron as the marquee figure in Cleveland. He is their biggest ticket. But I think it would certainly be the story of whoever can bring a title there is going to get up into, like, demigod-type status in that town. That's just the way it's always struck me. It'd be like, you know, the Cubs or the Red Sox.
Did Michael Brantley need to play in that game?
Michael Brantley is a superstar right now. It's unreal. So, yeah, I mean, anything like that. I think, we've been about Brantley, but I think it could be along those lines. Like, Manziel's excellent, but look at our Browns. Those are our Browns. They did it. So, I don't know. If Manziel can do something there, great. It would be cool to see. I'm rooting for the town. And as long as they're not being anything by light,
I have no reason to hate them. You know, so it's not like I'm rooting against them. I've never been to the town. Chances are I'll probably never be there. Although, they're by Sandusky. That's where that music brand is, like
five.
Because they have the best roller coasters in the world, but whatever that park is out there. So, all right, final say from the three of us. This is kind of an ambiguous question because we don't know how long LeBron James is going to be there. He's only guaranteed to be there 1 year. Got a 2-year contract, player option for the second, and then we kind of assume he's going to stay there and wind up signing a little longer term deal after that. But we don't know. So just the question is very simple: will the Cleveland Cavaliers win an NBA championship with LeBron James on their roster? Neil, what do you got? Final answer.
No. I think it's going to be a repeat of what you saw in his first run. You know, I just don't think that they'll have the supporting cast to – he cannot – I don't think he can do it all himself. And I think it's going to be a repeat.
You don't think Kyrie Irving is a transcendent-type guard in this league right now?
I think you need a third guy. You need a third guy. You look at the teams that are winning championships, they have a third guy. With the exception of maybe
that guy in the next couple of years.
I mean, you know, like Dan said, he's really young. I mean, I just don't see any chance that he comes in and is able to play a full 40 some odd minutes and you know, triple doubles and stuff. I mean, I think he can contribute, but I don't think he can be that third guy that is going to carry them.
I'm going to have to agree with Neil on this in the sense that I don't think they'll win one this year. I think if there is a year or two and you can bring a guy like Kevin Love in, I think you have a chance. I agree with you, Mike, that Irving, to me, has very much the game of Chris Paul. I think that's the kind of players you're looking at. With Irving, he's not the biggest guy in the world, but he's very powerful. He's obviously lightning quick. He's a great passer. He puts unbelievable passes on his guys when they're in the spots they need to be. I think they're a nice little two-man package, a little two-man game that they can get there with those two. But you are going to need a third-tier type player. I'm not sure Wiggins can be it. I think Wiggins will be a nice complimentary player. But I think if you get into year two or they re-up him or something and he gets into years three and four and you can bring in somebody on the block who's a viable threat down low, I don't think there's any question. But I do still think that the Spurs are going to be dangerous. I know that's out west, but I think Durant's team could make some moves, and I think the Bulls could do some things with a healthy Derrick Rose. So I'm going to have to say not in year one, possibly in year two, if they can bring in a pivot player, a la Kevin Love, somebody of that ilk. But
you better make a bet, you're saying no.
If I had to make a bet right now, I would say no.
All right. Well, we had posed a question earlier this week, and, we had people, Tommy and Norwalk said yes in 2016. A couple guys said that they get Kevin Love, they'll win the East. They keep waiting for a few years. It'll take a couple years, but they do think they'll get it. Danny from Malibu used to be a frequent caller, still a follower of the show. He says, yes, lock it up in multiple when he's there. So I'm leaning towards our fans. I think that they already – and I do think they're going to make another move, and I think they're going to make a hard push for Kevin Love. And even if it's not this year, they're going to make a hard push for another star next year. And I do think that this is not – his tenure there, I think he's going to – maybe he doesn't end his career. Maybe at the very end of his career, does a Karl Malone thing and goes somewhere else and he's 38 or something. But he's going to be there, I think, for the next 6-7 years. I'm leaning towards Dan from now. I think they're going to win multiple because I think you look what they have. You're going to have LeBron James in his prime for a minimum of 3 to 4 years. And at the middle, I think he's going to be healthy for longer than that. But I like you got Kyrie Irving. He's never really played with a point guard of the caliber of Kyrie Irving ever. And so you got that. And I think that, you got Wiggins. Look, I mean, you can't keep swinging. This is you have the Anthony Bennett issue. Well, I don't know that he'll ever be much more than a 7th or 8th guy, in the rotation.
And the other thing was that Wiggins was a far superior college player in 1 year than Bennett was in UNLV.
So, of course.
It's not even close. And to me, I never understood the Bennett pick. I watched way too much college basketball, and I had seen Bennett play like twice. And I said, they just put Anthony Bennett?
Yeah.
I mean, really, I watched him in the Mountain West tournament, and he would not impress you. So Wiggins, to me, isn't the swing and miss that Bennett is. Wiggins, I think, will be at least solid. But what you're saying, I mean, maybe Neil would change his tune also. If you say he's going to be there 7 years, I would say he would win. I'm only going by the contract that he's going to probably be under, which is looking like 2 years. I'm saying it's going to be tough if you don't get a big guy. It's just going to be because I don't think he's like Jordan who would win with Luke Longley and Bill Wennington and Bill Cartwright. I just don't think so. I think LeBron's unbelievable.
Right.
But I don't think I don't think he's the same player that Jordan was who could win with Scottie Pippen and a bunch of DJ Armstrong, John Paxson. I just don't see that.
When you look at the East right now, I think that the Pacers that we thought was the end of the year and now they lost last season today. I think that, and you don't know what's going on with Roy Hibbert in his mind and whatever he's doing. I think that they're not gonna be a one seed next year.
What about the Bulls?
The Bulls, I think, are an interesting team. I think an interesting team next year already is the Miami Heat. They're going to get Luol Deng, right? They bring back Wade and they get Shabazz Napier in there, but
he's
a real point. But I just read just before this that he's saying I didn't unfollow him. I don't know how that happened. So at least he's not saying, it seems weird. But so they got Shabazz Napier. They got Danny Green. He's got everything in the world to prove now. This guy was a premier scorer in the league for a little part of his career before the injuries. I think that the Heat are going to be an interesting story next year. Not that they are going to be on paper a better team than the Cavaliers or a couple other things in the Bulls. But I think it'll be a sure and intense Spoelstra. Who I've been a Spoelstra defender, and we're going to see, because he's got talent to have a home series in the playoffs.
What about the Nets?
The Nets, on the other hand, I mean, I know you like the guys they drafted late there, who I have no idea who they are. They
Brown.
They lose Paul Pierce, which is, and I was a defender of that trade. We trade away a bunch of first-round picks to keep a guy for years. You can't sign him. That doesn't bode well for you. But, the Nets will be a playoff team. They'll be in the same boat. They'll be between 4, 5, 6 seeds. I still think they're better than the Knicks.
I think Lionel Hollins is going to blow people's mind around here.
Yes.
I think he's a good basketball guy. I think he knows what he's talking about. I like Billy King.
I think they can kind of morph into actually a Mount Memphis Grizzlies team. Because going to get major minutes next year. If Brook Lopez could stay healthy, now all of a sudden they got two bigs down there that they could play on the court at the same time. You know what I'm saying?
You know what he did that was, like, tremendously impressive? When you watch the Grizzlies in those playoff runs they made, he got, first of all, he got Zach Randolph playing defense, which is astonishing.
Okay.
And he had Marc Gasol looking like Orlando Warren defending the interior. And it's unbelievable because the knock on Marc Gasol was he didn't defend. That was the knock on him when he first came to the league. Here's Holland, supposedly a defensive mind. And he got those two to play defense. I think he's going to come with a lot more respect than initially as just a coach, obviously not as a player. He's played, what, 11 years? Not that he's been there like kids. He's going to command respect. He knows what he's doing. He's got 400 or 500 wins in the league, so it's not like he just fell off the starter truck. I think that's a good surprise to people this year.
Yeah,
I do. I really do.
I think it could be a team to contend with. I think that Brook Lopez doesn't give him credit for the defender. He looks slow-footed, but he comes with a lot of big blocks. I don't know what is, you know, you can give me all these defensive stats you want. I'm just saying, fourth quarter of games, he's making big defensive stops for the man. I think he's a very smart defensive guy, and I think you get a guy like Ronald Hollins in there, it's going to only make it even better. So I like doing that. I mean, I don't have to go on. I just want to see, like, what's going to be in their way. I mean, obviously, there are teams in the West. So I think you get to the finals a couple of years in a row, you just, you know, you take your chances. Anything happens in a 7-game series. You get, you know, the Mavericks a couple of years ago. You get those teams that's like, you know, eventually the Spurs are going to fall. And Tony D's not here, so I can say what I want about Oklahoma City. Whoever knows that they're ever going to make that next step. And if they don't, and then Kevin Durant says, I actually do want to go win, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen. I just think that I see them winning a championship or two under LeBron, and I would put money on it if somebody wants to bet me or whatever. I would take that. But let's take a break. We come back. Neil, I want to hear your thoughts on All-Star festivities with that riveting home run derby, which was just – you just couldn't take your eyes off the set. And Berman just killing it. I mean, Berman is hilarious. Some of Berman's stuff. You got to admit, Danny, right?
I won't.
He is the worst. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back. We'll talk about a little bit of All-Star Game festivities. We'll get into a little Mets-Yankee second half. Cubs, World Series champ 2018. All right, we'll be right back.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Every year you assemble your closest friends to prepare for another season in the knockdown, drag-out world of make-believe football.
4 minutes.
You were born with the one skill every manager needs to play fantasy football. Absolutely no skill playing real football.
Not so good at catching.
Imaginary catches. Imaginary touchdowns. Next up, an imaginary score with an imaginary woman.
Good imagination.
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Swami of the sidelines. You may come in dead last, but you're always first with us.
Mr. Fantasy Football Manager Guy.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
All right, we're back. Tri-City Sports Guys. Just got done breaking down LeBron James and his move to Cleveland. And so let's get into All-Star Game festivities. Neil, I'd like to ask you this question about any major event. I feel like you are the microcosm of American sports fans. So if you watched it, it's worth watching. If you didn't watch it, it's not worth watching. I asked you about the Masters. How much of the Home Run Derby did you watch?
I watched the whole thing. You know, I was tuned in. I don't know that I was paying attention the whole time because I like to have the computer on and surf the interwebs as I watch TV. But I was more tuning in for Todd Frazier. I don't know if you remember me telling you this, but I used to play summer ball with him in a wooden bat league in Point Pleasant when he was about 18, 19 years old, just graduating from high school, going to Rutgers. And it's crazy to me to see him in a home run derby because I don't know what it was about him when I played with him then, and even now, he just doesn't really project to me as a home run hitter. But yet he has 17, 19 home runs this year. He's among the league leaders.
19,
and
yeah.
You see him in the home run derby, and it's like he doesn't look – even when he hits it out of the ballpark, you're like, that's not going out. That's not going out. And they all do. He has this some kind of like hidden strength, or I don't know if it's just the way that he swings the bat that he's able to get some extra torque. on his swing, but it's amazing how the ball can just travel when he hits it. And he did it when he was 18. I mean, I used to watch him hit, and I was like, oh, I understand what this guy's game is. He's just going to hit on the ground, and he's got the speed to beat it out, even though he doesn't even look like he's running fast. That was the other part of his game, is like the dude doesn't even look like he's running fast. He's beating out throws, stealing bases. He's just a deceptive dude all around. So
you know who I was comparing to? It's a guy that I like, even though when you watch him and you don't think he would do anything less, his swing doesn't know he would. It's Hunter Pence. He has a swing when he finishes his swing, and like if you look at Hunter Pence, you're like, the way he throws, he doesn't look like, if you just watch him playing, you would not think Hunter Pence is a multiple all-star. He's a good ball player, but what, if you watch him, he is the opposite of like a King Griffey. He's good at all.
Did you see a few years ago when he was at the Phillies? This week in baseball, they had Rollins, Howard, and Utley impersonating his practice swing.
No, but
one of the funniest things I've ever seen in my life.
I didn't even know Quinn was still on.
Well, it's been a few years. I don't even know if it's gone. But it was one of the funniest things in the world because Rollins was talking in the dugout and going, I don't even know how this dude gets any hits. He goes, I really don't. He goes, his swing is so screwed up. He goes, his practice swing is the most messed up thing I've ever seen. He goes, and we sit in the dugout and go, we chuckle every time he hits a block or somewhere. You know? But it was one of those, you know how he takes those really down-playing practice swings, like they're crazy down-playing or whatever? It looks like he's hitting a sledgehammer. And all goes, and you figure, he's never going to swing like that. He goes, and then he does. And I always like, I'm the lefty. I don't even get it. And I was like, I'm with him. I don't even know how the hell he does anything. But
he might be a guy from like the 20s. It's like old stock footage of a guy just like running, you know, scampering around. He's always awkward. He's all wide-eyed. He looks kind of weird looking. But that's what a little, and I didn't notice that comparison until that home run derby, Neil. And of course, I remember you telling me, I was actually texting with my former co-host, Big O, during the home run derby, and I'm like, you know, Neil played with this guy. I haven't been able to deliver on getting him on the show, but maybe someday he will. But it got me kind of pulling for him. But let me ask you this, Neil. I mean, the fact that he was in the finals, the way he got there, this whole new format, it was a joke, right? I mean, I think that the format had a lot to do with the fact that it was such a boring home run derby.
Well, yeah, and I'd love to hear, you know, what people think about Yasiel Puig's outing, because that was just, I mean, I know it doesn't mean a lot to a lot of people, but you're in the national spotlight, and it's your first All-Star game because you couldn't get voted into last year's, and, you know, you come out like that? I mean, he had a check swing that was, like, went to the pitcher.
He just mentioned that. I mean, I've never, if I was just, right now, I haven't taken a round of BP except for this. If I came in and just took a round of BP, it looked that bad. Or what if I went and took a check swing and a round of BP in general? What would have happened if he took a check swing and held back? Would that have counted as a swing? Would they have gone to, like, is there a first base umpire instead of a winner?
I don't even know, but here's a little mini game I want to play here. I want you guys to hazard a guess as to how much of the Derby Dan Sant watched.
Oh, I'm going to say you watched 0 minutes.
Neil,
any guess? The over? You can take 1 minute and win it if you watch any of it.
Oh, for Dan watching the how many minutes he watched the home run derby?
Yeah.
I'll take the under on 0.
I guarantee you're watching channel 146 and watching like old NHL games from them.
I was actually watching an Edward G. Robinson movie from 1930, Little Caesar. I would not watch the Home Run Derby if you paid me $10 a battery.
Did you ever like it, though?
No.
This is something I know you like, and I don't even remember. I don't even know what channel it was on. It used to be, when I was a kid, it would just come on sometimes, like after school or whatever, your own six, and it was a black and white footage, except the Home Run Derby, where it would get like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And the guy would announce it. It was on ESPN, Sean is saying. So if you remember those, Neil, it would be like, you know, Jimmy Fox. I don't know how old it was.
Old Shy Park in Philly.
And you know, it'd be like Ralph Kiner against Jimmy Fox.
Yeah.
It'd be like, and it'd be like, the first thing, you get three outs. You had man home runs, and they would announce like it was a game.
And the winner would pick up $1,500. This was like 1955. That's like $40 million now. I think that's actual winning play. $40 million now.
Did you ever see those, Neil?
You're talking about the old school, like, black and white home run derbies where it's like, and now at that,
it was structured like a nine-inning game. It was structured like you had three outs per inning, and then the other guy would go. The bottom half of the inning, you know, Willie Mays would come up, and he'd get three outs, and then it would switch over. That is the way a home run derby should be. They should just pick one guy from the National League, one guy from the American League, maybe have some sort of trial during the day how you get to it. That would be way more exciting if you're just watching Cespedes against whoever from, you know what I mean?
I'll tell you this. First of all, I watched the entire game, the actual All-Star game, but I actually thought it was, you know, it was riveting for once. I loved all the Jeter stuff, which, you know, we don't have to go crazy. I'm sure we'll touch on the Wainwright thing a little bit, but I enjoyed the game because there's guys in the game that I really like watching, like Mike Trout, Miguel Cabrera. I love watching Jose Bautista hit, Pulo. I mean, you can't go wrong with him.
Altuve.
Yeah, Altuve.
He's
like 4 feet tall. He was hitting rifle shots. But the thing that has always struck me about the Derby is, number one, I know all those guys can hit the ball a mile. So to watch Giancarlo Stanton hit a ball 500 feet does nothing for me. Like, I know he can do it. What I would be more interested in, and I'm not asking the league to do this, but watching outfielders throw into a bucket from somewhere. Like, can he throw a ball, like, Cespedes, put him down the line like he did at Angel Stadium? Then I would like to watch that stuff. Watching guys, you know, can he get to this ball up the middle? Like, put the, like, Altuve a second. Can he get to this ball up the middle? But in terms of watching them hit homers, it's like, I know how good those guys are. In my mind, I can quantify just how good they are. It doesn't impress me, and it doesn't even upset me to hear Wheaton hit a homer.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't take anything away from him as a player. Because you watched Bobby Abreu years ago, he hit 5,000 homers, and then he hit like 3 in the second half of the year, and he said it screwed up his swing.
Yeah.
So it does nothing. He's not a home run hitter. He hit a bomb all over the place.
I was actually thinking of, because remember, Pete was talking about how Tony Gwynn used to take batting practice. He had the net down the first base line, net down the third base line, hit 10 balls, 10 balls. Like, if they were to incorporate some sort of skills competition, the problem is going for baseball there.
Yeah, but I would love it.
Oh, if you hit, like, you know, how long it takes you to hit that net, hit that net, hit that net, hit a home run, or whatever, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And have it like that, and then have the outfielders just throwing missiles into the, you know what I mean?
That's the thing, though.
But it'll never happen. Like, I used to love the skills competition in football.
I love the skills competition in NBA All-Star Weekend when they do.
I thought it would be good. It didn't seem like they were really into it. I remember Devin Harris was mad.
I love it in the NHL All-Star game. I love seeing the speed race, how fast they can go, and, you know, up into the ice.
It's like a little field day.
I love the puck handling drills. A few years ago up in Montreal, they had the breakaways on the goalies, and I remember guys were doing crazy, stupid moves, picking the puck up with their stick, throwing it behind their back, beating Carey Price, Patrick Kane going over his head. To me, that's more exciting than watching Zdeno Chara hit a puck as hard as he can. Like, I know he hit bombs.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of...
If you just want to hit bombs, why not just have every guy get one swing off the tape? Whoever hits the ball first. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean...
You have the ball, let's hit a 490-foot home run, and be done with it.
I'm not in any way saying the MLB should get rid of it, because apparently people enjoy watching it. I just don't.
Yeah.
It just doesn't do anything for me. I like watching the game, but it's fun.
So overall, Neil, did you like it? I'm going to say, every year I do, part of me, like, in this hour leading up to it, I'm like, I'm going to watch on Thursday. That's actually kind of exciting. So I all remember back to the Josh Hamilton home run derby, which... Our producer here, Shawnee, had a chance to be at that home run derby, if you remember, at Yankee Stadium, and he had about 78 home runs. That was one of those magical calls. That was awesome.
Yeah, that's fun.
That was cool. So, Neil, I mean, did you enjoy it? Did you enjoy the format? Did you enjoy it? I know you were rooting for your boys. You had, like, a rooting interest in it. But overall, I mean, was it a couple hours that you wasted? I mean, I think it was like 11:30, right?
I mean, no, it wasn't a waste of time. I would like to see them clone Giancarlo Stanton. That would be cool because, I mean, the one shot was like 500-plus feet, almost left the stadium. I mean, stuff like that gets me pumped, and that's why I tune in every year, is because I want to see the display of power. It's like, yeah, you know these guys can home runs, but how far can they hit the ball? I'm going to see people lose their mind. And you can see the players. When you see other professionals lose their mind over someone hitting a baseball in a home run derby, it's like it brings you back to what the game is all about. And so when Stan hits that bomb, it's like you see all the players go nuts. You're like, this is why I watch it. Now, I don't watch it for Berman. I mean, he's got to retire. I mean, he's a mess right now. They just showed him on the red carpet at the ESPYs, and it's like, dude, sweating buckets. It's like, he was struggling to come up with words during that broadcast. And you know, it's time for them to revamp the broadcast team for the Home Run Derby and get some new talent in there that's got something to say, and that's not just repeating the same shtick year in and year out.
Go ahead. Well, go ahead.
The first thing I want to say is Augusta National got rid of him. You guys know that? They got rid of Berman because they thought he's just a disgrace to the game of golf. So when ESPN goes and covers it, their first year that they had the right to cover it, they said, okay, he can do it. And then after 2 days, they listened to him, they got rid of him. So that's another reason to love Augusta National. That's absolutely true. Same thing with Gary McCord, who said that the Greens need a bikini player.
Mm-hmm.
And they got rid of him. But, Neil, the Coach Ireland here had a question about how staged do you think those reactions are that players are having there? Because I do agree that if I was in person there, like sitting where those players are sitting would be awesome.
But McCutcheon looks like he's never seen a home run before.
Yeah, I know.
It's like he's never seen a game of baseball. It's like the guys at the end of life that are going to, they go to Yankee Stadium and they're all excited. Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence, they're all excited to see a game. Like, he's never seen a home run before.
You never
have one. Well, are they staged? I got the same sense. I'm glad that Johnny brought that up.
I can understand how, you know, someone sets a precedent and then all the other, you know, future All-Stars want to live up to it and exceed it. But I still think there's some genuine authenticity there in some of the reactions. I'm not a big fan of the guy who brings out the Gatorade. I think that's totally a paid placement by Gatorade. You can smell it from a mile away. But, you know, I think there's something to be said about, you know, some of the guys that you're like, no, you're phony right now. There's no way that you're really acting like that. But there are some moments where the crack of the bat happens. I mean, did you see the hand of the guy who caught one of Stanton's balls? It was swollen and bruised. It was swollen and bruised. I mean, you know, you can't deny the kid's power, and you get behind a kid like Todd Frazier, who's an up you know, newcomer. You know, some of the guys overreact, that's for sure. They're actors through and through, but you know, I'm totally with you guys in that they need to expand it and they need to go to other skills. You know, and one of the things that was sad about the whole festivities is that they didn't really too much mind or homage to Tony Gwynn. And one of the beautiful things about Tony Gwynn that Tucci mentioned on one of the calls before in a previous episode was that Tony Gwynn's ability to hit a ball into a bucket multiple times in a row. So maybe there's a case you can make for, okay, you have the home run derby. What about the bona fide placement hitter, a guy that who can hit it where he wants to hit it and putting up, you know, like targets in the field or something like that? I mean, there's a million ways you can go with the festivities. It's weird that they just stick to the home run derby.
Yeah, I agree with you, but it'll never happen because I think that's for baseball nerds, like I said. As a sappy dad of two, this is embarrassing to say, but the thing that I liked the most with the home run derby, there was that picture before the game. I don't remember who it was. I think it was Moss from the A's or somebody was in the dugout with his son had one of those, like, ice cream, you know, like whatever, SpongeBob companies. And he got it all over his pants, all over his father's pants. So he had these white All-Star pants on, and they were just, like, covered in, like, red and blue crap. And I did like, you were talking about guys, it would jog my memory of it, the guys hurting their hands. I love to see guys, like, fathers catching the home run balls and giving them, you know what I mean? And being, like, genuinely excited and giving it to their kids. Like, that was cool to me. The kids in the outfield, you don't want to ever crap on little kids, but those kids are, like, 12, 13 years old. How are they that bad at catching fly balls? I mean, they are just a mess out there. I can remember being 13 years old and kicking fly ball right off.
That's a liability problem. Yeah. You realize that? I mean, it is.
It is amazing how much that hurts.
I've watched it years past, and I remember seeing going, I had to catch ball when I was 12.
Yeah.
Absolutely had to. I mean, my father used to be fungos way higher.
Yeah. I remember going to my older brother's 5 years old in his practices, and the coach would let me go out there and catch fly balls with him, and I was like 10 years old, and I was like 15. I can catch fly balls. But there it is. It's like the kids you never. Here's your first baseball glove, kid. Get out there. But my idea that I posted on our website, which got zero hits, but I thought it was a good idea, was what they should do, because the Berman crux thing was just, and I don't, look, I'm not a Berman fan, but I almost don't even blame him. Like, how many times can you just say, you get excited about a home run? So why don't they have different announcers for either each round or even each player? Like, bring your hometown announcer there. Like, if there's a Yankee in the game, have John Sterling there. And have it rotate out. It's never doing anything. It'd be exciting to be on that stage. A lot of these guys, most of them wouldn't know. Or there's the guy from the U.S. Army's love from the Hawk, whatever, Harold.
Oh, Harold.
Get in there. I think it would be exciting to have something different because they would get excited about their own guy.
You know how fast you'll get tired of putting on the board? Believe me when I say it.
You only watch it for one guy.
No, because
next year they'll be afraid of you, and you'll have him there. They put it on hold, but he can't say it every time.
First of all, you know, I would be fine if there were no announcements in anything. The games that I watch, I pretty much understand, so I'd be fine anyway. When it's a home run derby, I don't know why ESPN just doesn't save the coin and not put anyone out there. I understand.
Just play Pearl Jam and Tool Talk.
That'd be
perfect. Imagine if they had Tool playing the whole time, Rage Against the Machine.
If they had
you would watch that.
If they had When the Levee Breaks by Led Zeppelin on a loop for the duration of the home run derby, I probably would have watched it. My favorite Zeppelin song, I would have watched that. But listening to Burns.
Or maybe have the guy who's going to bat, like you pick your song at the bat, have the song that's playing while you're just, that's it. And then afterwards, they give a little
like
recap. They get to pick their song.
Because music is way better than home run derby. I'll tell you right now.
So your wife would watch it. Maybe some guy put John Legend up there. Imagine if you were the guy to pick John Legend.
I think you know what they should do really to soup up the home run derby? They should bring back former players. Like you saw Hank Aaron at the game last night. Get Hank. Put up that temporary fence like they do for the celebrity solo.
Well, Pete Rose is in the thing. Let's get Pete out there.
Pete has over 1,000.
Let me know. I mean, what's your change you would make to the home run derby? Assuming they're never going to do the skills competition, Neil. What change would you make? Is there anything?
Nothing.
The music one. A little bit of bass is what Shawnee said. That would be crazy. Those kids would definitely be better.
I mean,
line's right.
I would honestly like to see you have the hardest throwing pitchers. Now, it's never going to happen, but like Aroldis Chapman or like, you know, someone like that who can pump it like 99, 100 miles per hour, the guys that can throw absolute smoke and have them go against the top home run hitters and see what kind of results you get. Like, you know a fastball is coming. Can you time it? And how far can you hit it? Because, like, you look at some of the furthest home runs that have ever been hit in the major leagues. You look at Mark McGwire versus Randy Johnson. Randy Johnson was coming in with some serious cheese, and McGwire was juiced out of his mind, and he hit it 570 feet. So, I mean, that's what I'm into. I mean, there's the big swings and the big cuts. Power versus power. Talking like Hulk Hogan versus Ultimate Warrior WrestleMania 6.
I like the idea of just matchup. Just the left matchup. I want to see lefty-lefty, like, you know, Chapman against Cano. And in that fact, and if Cano can get a hit, it's just a hit, like, his team gets 1 point. If it's a home run, they get 10 points. If it's a strikeout, Chapman gets 10 points. You know, the National League gets 10 points.
What about
that would be exciting.
What about just
like a Pirates cup?
A pitching machine. Cranked up to 105.
This is the thing that
you watch that
the Pitucci thing and shooting 200-mile-an-hour tennis balls and they have to say 1 3.
I would watch that. I would watch balls coming in with
who can hit the fastest
cheddar.
They just keep turning it up until everyone.
You give them points based on what they have it set up. So if a guy wants to start out at like 92-93, he gets like a point.
Like hitting layup.
Yeah, he goes up like 97-98, he gets like 2 points. If he goes over 100, you start giving him like 5 pointers. So a guy who's out of it. He's not hitting them. Maybe he's got 3 outs left. He goes, put that thing up to 107.
You see the thumb go
up?
He's
getting 150 points for homer. And just zip him in there from 60 feet, 6 inches. I think that would be something I would look at. I'm not going to watch it.
That would
be like,
a must-watch something for any baseball fan.
It would absolutely be great because the fact that you're out there and the guy's throwing BP basketball to you, that's not – well, I was watching just the other day that the Diekman kid from the Phillies just throwing absolute aspirin tablets. I'm going, see, this is great. So when that's the alternative to watching a 60-mile-an-hour fastball come in, I don't want to watch the 60-mile-an-hour fastball come in. These guys are in the big leagues. It doesn't impress me. Every guy in the big leagues is going to. They just talk about – there's folklore stories about Wade Boggs and batting practice, hitting balls 480 feet. But that's not the way you hit. But when you put a ball in there 65-mile-an-hour, you go, what the hell?
Yeah, and they said that when the Mariners, 5 or 6 years ago, had a home run derby, he threw one.
That doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Because he's got such a beautiful swing.
He's like, you can hit 350-foot home.
Right.
You can do it all the time. I will tell you, like, when I had – I've only been on the field once to watch Diamondbacks and Major League game. I had to go there last year to watch the Mets. And it was awesome. But it wasn't just because these guys are hitting just drop the bomb. Really, they were playing the Phillies. You watch guys how they take the BP because I'm a baseball nerd. Like, these guys that could just, you know, go the other way. And I remember, like, Carlos Ruiz, and he had an impressive batting practice. And I remember, like, you see Jordan Battleston had an awful batting practice. He's trying to hit the ball out of the ballpark. I remember your boy Wrecker having just dropping bombs in D.C., but also hitting line drives. I remember Dominic Brown was the most impressive guy in that in any of the groups I saw. And so to me, that's exciting, but it is, you're right, it's not that exciting. just to see it. But all right.
I'd love to see, like, you know, just like a double play kind of thing. I would. I mean, if you put a timer on it, Moose would give me a dirty look.
That would get a tough rating.
But I'm just saying,
double play kind
of thing. That's the stuff I'm saying I would be interested to watch would be.
Yeah, niche demographic.
You put Jeter and you put Canelo out there, and you're hitting Fungos to the left, to the right, whatever, 6-4, 3-4, 6-3, whatever, and you're seeing how quickly they can get it over there.
But the moment it touches the glove of the short
versus too low versus Canelo. And then, you know, you put Altuve out there with Ramirez or whatever.
This is something that we should be hired by the Major League Baseball.
See, I would watch that.
But that's an off-season. You can't be doing these type of things.
That's fine, though.
But have, like, a day where you're just like, let's find out.
Yeah.
We're going to decide who's the best.
I got the stink eye from Coach, and I understand.
He left the studio.
Yeah, he left the studio. That wouldn't be for everybody, but I'm saying that's something I would watch versus guys
that came on our that would be something the MLB Network should be doing, though. That's where you
I would watch that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, Theo Puig against Yonetis Cespedes, sitting out in the outfield. Let's see who's making the throw.
Who can throw a ball faster and farther from 370 feet away? Is it Yonetis Cespedes or is it Rick Ankiel? Just bring Ankiel out of retirement and throw him out.
He's probably just waiting around for this competition.
He's probably
pitching this competition right now. Yeah, like Rudy Gruden's about his like reality show. Ankiel, like, I can still throw the ball really hard. I just need a venue to express this and somehow make money. Let's do that. I like that idea.
Or one more to throw in there. You could do, the top catchers trying to throw out D. Gordon and Billy Hamilton. Or you flip it. You say, all right, D. Gordon or Billy Hamilton are tacking up from third. You got Puig and Wright on a fly ball. Can he throw them out? I mean, just like you got to think about the different situations that excite you as a baseball fan. And then you put in these dream players that you've always wanted to see go against each other but not often do. And you have ratings gold.
I would watch.
Coach Irons came back in the studio to let me know when we were young kids. I think I was in high school, even college. We used to play. We used to set up back to back flip and fly in my backyard, back to back, and we play. We used to call it big play to play. And one guy would stand on the end where the splashdown bull was, and would throw a tennis ball to another guy. And the third person was tagging up. You didn't have to go on anything. You waited for your chance. And it was just a flight to play. And you would just haul ass down and then slip on the slip and slide. It ended in one of my friends chipped his tooth playing
to the I was going to say, honestly, that sounds like a career ending injury.
I mean, now we're 200 pounds. We're flying through.
Yeah.
We're going through. But, yeah, my good friend, Brad McCarter, chipped his tooth during this whole ordeal. I got into a fist fight with Coach Allen. Brother, that's a true story.
Yeah.
Because I was avoiding the tag. And I came up high and just clubbed him.
Yeah.
Jordan.
Are you a little bit bothered by the fact that he's got a football player?
It did bother me. It was like a collegiate lax player, but he could just crush a little ball. I like that idea, but that is something we gotta have our sponsor, PPQ, he's now like a nationwide celebrity.
It should be.
I mean, it's the best guy in the world. We gotta get him to get a contact over the MLB Network. Just to say, these guys have ideas. Tri-State sports guys still come.
They're not good ones, but they have a lot of
them. But people, we throw enough against the wall. I like this. I like Neil's play, the fight idea. I like the batting skill competition.
Yep.
We got Danny Cannarella's Turn 2.
I'd love to see it.
The Turn 2 Foundation.
How cool would that have been like 25 years ago to watch Trammell and Whitaker just turn double plays? Because everyone knows it. They turn more than anybody. They're phenomenal. How fast do they do it?
Or Donias and Alomar?
Yeah, or like, let's say, Velarde and Gallego.
And just have them out there.
Just put them out there. Those are two Yankees I love to watch.
What? I bet you can get a couple of those 50-year-old guys.
I would love to see
them. And they would still have to sit there. I bet you, I play in the men's league where there's still guys that are like in their 40s. They still can't hit. They can't run. But their hands, I think it's like the last thing to go. Their hands are super quick.
Well, let me ask you this question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Would you watch a home run derby between Cal Ripken Jr. and Paul Molitor right now?
I'd rather watch Steve Balboni against,
Jesse Hartfield, Mel Hall.
That's their name. But yeah, of course I would.
Kevin McReynolds.
But that's what the MLB Network should be doing in the offseason.
That'd be great. I would watch those things. I really would.
I would watch it, like, you know.
Retired players. It's coming out. Forming at home run derbies in big league ballparks. Like, you go down to the Oriole Park in Camden Yards.
You can get Tom Seaver come be 30. You can get another celebrity come be.
You get, like, Cal Ripken versus DJ Surhoff. A couple former Orioles, you put them out there. I would watch that. Because I love seeing. I
thought
I watched, like, senior golf.
I would. How about, like, Buff against Buff? Like, a guy like Willie Mulcahy, who's supposed to be really good and stuff. Like, bring him back. He could use $1,000.
Grant Brown.
Yeah. My initial thing, although he did have a couple good years in the first, is, like, Greg Jeffrey, who Sean Abner, who was the first person we're all thinking they're going to make the majors or whatever the guy has. But we're not, you know, like, get these guys. Or get Billy Bean out there, who was
a Buffalo watcher.
And what get bust the all bust team, let's see, showing what you could have done.
I'm sure they'd love to show up. I'm sure they'd love to.
You don't think Sean Abner, whatever he's doing, could use 20 grand?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cash? Outdoor? Neil, by next week's show, I want three MLB, I mean, because it's become clear to me that I know you work behind the scenes with your pilot idea and all that. You took my blackout idea and you ran with it. God bless you. That's how the Hollywood business works. So I know you're going to be making your Hollywood money, but as a favor to me, Neil, come up with three ideas. We'll all come up with three to start. So we can go and we're going to tell Major League Baseball we've got nine ideas. Maybe Coach Darling gets on board. Maybe Maddie, our producer, gets on board. And we all come up with some ideas and pitch it.
I tell you one thing. Coaches are going to take the double play idea from me. I hate this. He just walked out of the studio and came back. He's got a fox on his face now.
He's chewing on a toothpick.
Okay. He's got pictures covered in fur.
Bill, all right, can you do that for me? Can you give me three good ones?
Yeah, right off the top, right now, or you want me to, like, I can think about it, I got to stew about it.
Do whatever you want, dude. I want you to think about it, but, I mean, your first three in your head right now. We have clearly have no agenda on this show, so we're just talking at this point. Give me three ideas right now.
For what? For an MLB network to take and make money off of?
We're going to do an MLB, like a running series, skills competition. It could be old-timers. It could be an all-buff thing. Some sort of skills half-hour show.
I got one.
Every Wednesday night. Well, Dan's going to jump in. Is it better than the double play?
It's much better than the double play.
Yeah. But, like, you know, at the end of the back, infield outfield, they roll it down the field.
I say they bring in guys like Usain Bolt, Tyson Gay, and stuff like that. And have them race the D. Gordons and Eric Youngs.
But have them go first to third.
Billy Hamilton.
Have them go first to third.
First to third, see how fast they can get there. Yeah. Against, like, world-class track stars. Like, there's Bolton, and then there's the other Jamaican guy who's nasty. Then
they're never going to be in that clue. But, I mean,
no, right.
Give them home the second.
I think
it'd
be awesome in baseball.
In Cleveland.
Go. Would you watch that? Would you watch Eric Young Jr. race against Usain Bolt?
Yeah.
In a hundred, yeah. In a second, you were.
And
that's the kind of stuff we can pitch MLB. And then, you know, whether you like it or not, I'm told going to pitch the double player.
I like it.
I love it.
Anybody that's watching MLB Way I Work in February anyway, it's probably going to love it. All right, so, Neil, do you have any right now? At least give me one. Like, if we have to say, like, dude, we're walking into MLB studios right now. We you know, like, you forgot your homework. What do you got for us?
I mean, you know, I like, oh, geez. I mean,
big play to play. You can take my big play to play. We're gonna flip and fly.
I like. Okay, I like. Well, I mean, this is kind of obscure, but like turning a double play, I like seeing how accurate a guy could be with a dude coming in hard, right? So, like, say you know you have Daniel Murphy coming in taking the throw, and he has to spin and pivot, and like you have like bullseyes, right, or targets, and if he hits the target, he gets points, right? So a dead accurate throw. Bullseye, he gets, you know, so on some points, but if, you know, he gets negative points if he doesn't hit the target, something like that, where it's like a turn at second base. I like that idea. You know,
I bet you a lot of, like, team-building things. Did you say that you're brainstorming, no idea is a bad idea?
So much.
I just think that's a long title for a show. Whatever. I mean, how would you wrap that up, Neil? It's like, if I'm scrolling through the channel, then I'm going to the guy, and it's like most accurate for
double play breakup. How accurate are you with a semicolon?
Well, no, I mean, double like, you're not, it's not its
accuracy?
Own show. No, it's not its own show. You have, like, a couple guys performing. It's, like, all part of one show. You know, it's like a,
yeah.
What did they call that back in the day? It was like the oh, my God, I forgot. Like, Wide World of Sports used to have these challenges. And, like, Jason Sehorn used to always win these frickin' challenges, even though he didn't do anything on the football field because he was the most athletic, apparently. But, like, I'd like to see, you know, I'd like to see pitchers hit. I'd like to see, you know, position players, like designated hitters try and pitch. I'd like to see guys, like, out of their element a little bit. I think that would be cool.
I would like to see that. And I also like, piggybacking off your idea, which I don't know if I'm willing to sit in front of the executives at MLB and pitch that idea with the breaking up the double play thing, but having a pitcher with like a target behind home plate and they got to hit, all right, this is a, you know, you got to throw me a break ball in the outside corner, you got to hit this spot. boom, you got to knock it down. You know, it's almost like archery. You're hitting these targets, boom, 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 with, like, you know, making marks on the thing. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
I
love when they show the K zone and the strike zone, and they have like where the ball actually crossed, you know, and they always make a note of like, well, here's what the catcher set up and here's where the pitch ended up. I mean, you know, to me that would be really interesting to see who really is the most accurate. And especially if you could give them like situations, right? So you're saying, okay, here's the situation, dude. 3-2, two outs, bottom nine, got to get a strike, and you got to throw it right at this location.
I like that idea. I remember in college, Neil, you remember our good friend and a captain, Carl Sinise, was a guy who was a very confident fellow. And I remember talking about pitching, and I remember saying, like, I never understand how a guy, like, bases loaded, and it's 3-0, they can't just throw a strike. And he goes, let me see if you can do it right now. We went down to the bullpen, we set up a milk crate, the final plate, like, propped up on a stool. He said, go ahead, throw a strike right now. And I'm like, of course I can do it. I missed it. So you think, I like those ideas. It seems like, oh, you get these major leaguers out there, and, you know, I don't even think people are like, well, they could lob this pitch. I think it would be worse for them to lob the pitch. It'd be less accurate.
You guys have the deal in Hopkins where ground ball's back to the pitcher. Coaches I ever played for one, everybody, you know, step and throw, because when you watch a lot of pitchers, other than the really
like
good ones, they don't know what they're doing.
They don't get off the mound. Yeah.
They don't get off the mound. Yeah, they're throwing on an incline, decline, whatever.
I don't remember that. Did we do that? I mean, I remember, like, instinctually I would say that, step and throw. But I also, like, to get off the mound, it's hard to throw on even surface. I don't remember Coach having us do that, but you're a pitcher. You remember that. Did we do that?
We had a lot of, field your position, but I don't know that we did a lot to the other bases. I think it was just the first base. All I know is I am not going to deny it. I was horrible. And if the ball is hit back to me, I forget about it. I have to, like, go into my windup to make sure that I have to throw be accurate. I just couldn't do it. It was like it's a whole different mechanism. And I've had plenty of plays to second base or first where it's just like, what is going on? Did your arm malfunction? What the hell has happened? It's like I lose all power.
I would love to see Major League pitchers doing mundane, everyday players.
Just stuff. Running wires. Within 30 minutes, it's got to just running wires.
I would love to see, like a guy like Matt Hart fielding grounders at short, flipping double plays into the track.
Yeah, you'd be surprised.
Because I think the specialization of pitching nowadays, especially once you get into college, get into minor leagues and pros, obviously, it's all you do. I think it takes away from all that stupid crap that I hate, like pitchers can't catch pop-ups. Pitchers are some of the best athletes on the field, and they don't let them do some of the most mundane things that any baseball player should be able to do. So I'd be interested to see, could Matt Harvey hit a cutoff on a fly ball right through the field? Like, does he know how to crow hop as well? Because he's been pitching for so long, nothing else.
I got an idea. We used to play, and I think it was called, maybe it was called knockout or something. We used to play it like in travel league when you're like 12 years old. And you get all, the whole team would be, you know, spray around the infield. And coach just hit randomly. You didn't know where he was going. You had to field it and throw it, the home plate. And if you missed it or you bobbled it or you threw it away, you were out. Do that, but you can't do that with shortstop. You'll be there all day. Do that with pitchers.
It'd be great.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I'd love to see
guys hitting rocket bumpers.
I'd love to see outfielders play the infield. I'd love to see infielders play the outfield. And if you did it under the guise, if MLB did it under the guise of it's for charity, like if you did that knockout game, let's say.
Well, we would kick a beat. Well, we went our beats a little bit. We came up with the idea. Right.
Just the Godfather. Give me a little something to wet my cake. Those this. But I think that kind of stuff is cool. See, like Neil said, seeing guys out of their element in whatever sport it is.
Yeah.
It's very interesting to see. It would be interesting to see a guard post up.
Yeah.
In like a drill, and just to see what does a 6'2" guard have when he's got a 6'8" guy guarding him, like stuff like that. Seeing guys out of what they're comfortable doing, I think would be a lot of fun.
So
for this all stemmed from a home run derby call, by the way.
Yeah, it's got that.
Like,
this all came in
at
the time that Keith Zambrot never called in. God bless you, Keith. Call whenever you need to, brother. But I as you're talking and all this stuff is coming out, I'm really going. You know, you always wonder, like, how am I going to become a millionaire? This is it.
Yes.
We just figured it out, Neil.
Yeah.
I can't wait to walk into my office tomorrow. Sir, I'm done here. Come see me at MLB Network. We're doing this. I'm going to watch a point guard post up against a 6'8" guy. Millions. Neil, I like it. I like everything that's happened over the last 40 minutes. our producer has come back to the studio, but he's not really, I don't think he wants to be fully a part of it. He came up with an idea, though. He whispered in my ear. He said his idea is, like, get a bunch of outfielders out there and like rapid fire fly ball, fungos, like line to line. Like,
yeah.
You're going to be in between two lines, and you got to just run back and forth, and who can fly the ball, who gets the most. As long as it's in between these things, you know, and shooting from a fall side, shooting from a jump gun, you know.
Yeah.
There's no air from the hitter.
The guy who came up with the pet rock retired 500 years ago. That's
yeah.
how much money he made.
But it was a much better idea.
And that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. We're on to something here. So, you know, if we just get the right people.
We just got to, look, we got a guy in Mr. Matt Scully
yeah.
who can get Pete Rose on our show
right.
before he goes on ESPN and Opie and Anthony. We got Jerry Rice on. He can get us a meeting with MLB Network.
Right. And maybe, just maybe, MLB won't like it. So we go to the NFL Network.
Yeah.
We say,
we go
what,
to Fox Sports
what
One.
About,
CBS Sports is in Stanford.
Yeah, let me see Adrian Peterson under center, just throwing 15-yard outpass.
Yeah. I want to see Allen Iverson in a quarterback competition. You remember how like, you were
yeah.
in high school quiz?
Yeah,
I want to see the guy who chose the other sport. Like Ricky Henderson was supposedly an ungodly football player.
Yeah.
Chose the other sport.
How about Sidney Crosby?
Like a what if?
Goaltender.
It's like that movie Mr. Destiny. Like what if happened? One like if Ricky Henderson had decided to go, what would have happened? Let me see you go. And I have to go through the combine
yeah.
right now.
That's all I'm saying. I mean, this could be. This
so like a better be like Drew Henson. Because a guy who like well, you didn't really do well in either. You tried, but like what you should you have done? Charlie Ward.
Certainly not.
Let me see Charlie Ward go out and play football. Maybe he could have done that.
Yeah, he was you know, a good pro basketball player, but maybe he would have been on the lead. Maybe he would have been the next Roger Staubach.
Athletic.
He was smart in college. He's
yeah.
athletic.
Let's get Brian Leaf out there.
Oh, he's my
you got to go to the pen to get him, but we'll get him. I'm just saying this is a moneymaker. So we're going to get Matt on board with this.
Right.
He'll get his standard 2-3%.
Yeah.
And we'll just put the rest, and then we'll do what we got to do.
We'll do what we got to do.
All right. Hey, yeah, let's take a break. Because we haven't taken a break in a while, but when we come back, we do have to talk about the All-Star game itself. It was about their Jeter thing. It blew up on Twitter, blew up on Facebook yesterday, so there's a lot to get to with that. So we'll be right back. Go eat a sweet potato, all right? We'll be right back.
They come from the earth, dirty, ragged. But inside is a natural sweetness that comes from being wrapped in the earth's embrace and gently caressed by the hands of loving fathers.
This ain't no romance novel. It's just a sweet potato.
Nature's Sweet Potato, now in McCain Super Fries. McCain, it's all good.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys, Mike DePalma, Danny Santarella, Neil Lynch, future millionaires. Check us out this offseason on the MLB Network. Our skills competition is about to take. I don't make any announcements yet, but during the break, we made a couple calls. I think it's going to happen. Number to call if you want to talk at all, 347-637-2306. So, last night's All-Star game. You liked the game. I watched. I picked up the game. I had fallen on my phone. I picked up the game probably in about the third inning or so. I thought the game itself was a very well played game. I liked everything about it. I don't like when Major League Baseball or sports in general or ESPN or whatever tries to manufacture a moment. And I felt like, you know, they wanted to manufacture a moment with Derek Jeter last night. And this guy has got. And somebody, a friend of mine, Danny Pratt, had posted on a thing like, what's your favorite Derek Jeter moment? And it was never going to be whatever happened last night. But people just need to have this exclamation point on his career. It's clearly not going to happen this year with the Yankee belt thing. So it's like, this is going to be the exclamation point for his career. What's going to happen? My favorite Jeter moment was his 3,000th hit. I know there's a million other, like, bigger moments, but then I see when he comes out on that Saturday and is facing David Price, and I think he was 5-for-5. I think it was his fourth hit. It's a home run with a 3-2 count of spike off pitches. It was out of the movies, and it was surreal. Even as a non-Yankee fan, it was a moment. I swear to you, I'm watching it live, it gave me chills. And I think your brother was there, wasn't he, Coach?
Yeah.
His older brother, Billy, was there. I mean, that to me was like a moment. So they try to, like, manufacture this moment. And the hype started I don't even have a problem with him being in the opening, because it is the fan vote for a reason. If they want to watch, and they want to watch, I don't have a problem with it. Even though it's a joke that he was there, if it's supposed to count, I don't have a problem with it. It always started as a thing to be like, you know, for the fans. I don't have a problem with it. But I felt like, and Neil mentioned earlier, they didn't even mention Tony Gwynn's passing because they were so wrapped up.
Or Don Zimmer.
Or Donnie Zimmer.
I didn't even get to them.
And they're so wrapped up in Derek Jeter's last thing and all the rest. Try to manufacture a moment. Did you get that sense watching the game, Neil?
I didn't. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but I didn't get that sense. I mean, to me, I understand the home field advantage and all that stuff. It's never made in one single iota of difference to me if that's what's on the line. Because if that's truly what's going to be on the line, then you can't tell me every team's ever up there. You can't tell me that you're not going to then take the best players. Because clearly, to me, my argument was never that Derek Jeter deserved to be in the All-Star game based upon his 2014 merits. But, you know, you're going to get that send-off. And I did feel, and I still do feel.
I like the moment we came off the field.
Yeah, I mean, I still feel like it was the right thing to do. And I think it was the right thing to do for John Farrell, batting leadoff. I think that's great. I think the fact that he was able to get two hits, I don't care about any of that stuff, but he gets his two hits. To me, it was just a cool thing for a guy. And there was a certain bit of, like, you know, maybe a little bit of nostalgic sadness. But I'm like, you know, he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for anybody out there who hates on Derek Jeter, that's fine. Everybody's entitled to his or her opinion, but there is going to be a small little void when you watch the Yankees because not going to be there anymore. And that, to me, was like, it was great. The fans were awesome. Seeing all of his teammates, seeing Wainwright clapping for him, like when he's waiting for him to take his first at-bat was great. I get maybe it's semantics, but they're clearly manufacturing something for him. But I didn't get the feeling as I'm watching it, like, boy, this is a put-on. I was fine with it when he did it with Ripken in Seattle and A-Rod said go over the shortstop and go over. It's fine. It's fine to me if you're going to honor the great players because baseball has been through enough garbage through the steroid era and all the other stuff that to get one moment where the guy who would say whatever you want about him, maybe he did this, maybe he did that, he's never been, you know, implicated in anything. And here he is with 3,400 hits, arguably the best shortstop that's ever played, certainly in the discussion. For me, to let him have a moment was great.
Yeah,
it made the game fun for me at the onset. And then I watched it after that because the players were
I agree to the extent. I'm going to ask you, but I just think, and I wasn't like upset. I wasn't furious about it. I just think that 20 years from now, we're sitting there at a bar or whatever on our show or, you know, counting our millions for MLB money, we're going to talk about the greatest Derek Jeter moment. There's nothing that was going to happen last night. It was ever, but
I think that's a different argument. You know what I mean? There's the great flip play out in Oakland. I always love diving into the third base line stands and socks. Nothing last night.
The flip play was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, even if he had hit a grand slam last night, it wasn't going to trump things he had done in actual games that really mattered for his team. So he wasn't going to do anything even if he played the whole game and got 5 hits. It wasn't going to make an ounce of difference. But for me to see them honor a guy who, for all intents and purposes, has just been a clean player from what we know, was fine. I would have no problem with it regardless of if it was a Cardinal or whoever. It would have been the right thing to do. That's just how I felt.
So, Neil, what did you think? Am I off base thinking that Major League Baseball and Fox was trying to manufacture a moment there?
This whole season, ever since he made that damn announcement, has been absolute overkill. Overkill, overkill. I am sick of it. I don't care how great he is. This didn't happen for a lot of the greater players in the past. So are we making up for lost time now? Is that what's going on? That commercial was absurd. Absurd.
Yeah, that commercial was.
If you're a Red Sox fan, you should be livid. Livid that John Lester decided to do that commercial, that they had Boston fans in the commercial tipping their cap. I'm livid just as a Mets fan knowing that they threw fake Mets in there and blurred their faces out to do that crap, Mr. Met in the background. I mean, the whole thing was manufactured, the whole thing, and it was ridiculous. Just stop.
Yeah.
There's so many other things that you need to be talking about that are important baseball than Derek Jeter, who's getting gifts from every freaking team he goes to see. Just quit it. Cut it out. You have plenty of time to reflect on Derek Jeter after he retires. You have plenty of tributes and videos and all that nonsense. why the hell are we heaping all this attention on this guy because he decided to announce his retirement for the season, pull up Mariano Rivera? Thanks, Mariano. That really helps out for future generations. Now we're going to do this for every a-hole that's going to quit? I mean, it's just like, it was just madness. And the only thing that I enjoyed was that there was one guy out of all those fans at Target Field yesterday who decided to try and start an overrated chant and got quieted by Derek Jeter hitting an oppo double.
That part was great. He just wanted to give her, wanted to be that guy like from an SNL skit. Started. It doesn't annoy me that Nike did that move and all that, but to me, I didn't get, oh my God, you're going to watch this thing and you're going to get chills. Am I going to get chills from a Nike commercial? Which I'm not going to get chills from. I'm not going to get chills from John Lester tipping his cap to Derek Jeter. You know, it's like that Dick's Sport commercial where they're all, like, talking to each other.
Well, I mean,
I'll
be in the center here because I did get some kind of feeling like that from it. And the other thing is that, you know, it bears mentioning that MLB has a bit of an image issue in terms of what has gone on the last 1 year. And Derek Jeter is...
Which is the fact that the Mets everyone was there because that was
right.
That the issue we're at hand.
And Derek Jeter, in that sense, is good for MLB's brand. I know it was an Nike ad. I'm just saying, what he did last night, they would not have done for Palmeiro. They wouldn't have done it for Rodriguez or McGuire. They wouldn't have done it for those guys. But he is good for the game in that sense that MLB can put him up front and center and go, this guy's good for us, like they did with Ripken when Ripken announced
his
retirement. They did the same thing.
And
I didn't hear any of this last year with Mariano. I didn't hear any of this going. I didn't. I'm just saying, me personally.
I did.
I didn't hear that.
The fact that he won the MVP last year, people upset.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm talking about the whole season. The fact that I forget what team he went to, and they presented him with a rocking chair made of broken bats and stuff. There wasn't that I heard. I'm not saying it wasn't there. There wasn't anything I heard that was quite as much of a backlash as what I'm hearing about Jeter. And I think Jeter is far more polarizing than Mariano ever was. And I think Jeter is far more polarizing than Chipper or even Kyle Ripken. So people want to throw Jeter under the bus for whatever reasons. I'm not saying that was what you guys are necessarily doing. But for me, it's just fine to give him his moment. We were talking off the air. I was listening to a little Colin Cowherd yesterday. And he's going, it's just a present. Just open it. Just enjoy it. This is the last vestiges of this great player that, as far as we know, was clean. And MLB, we can say whatever we want. MLB does have to clear up that little bit of tarnish that's on their brand for what they allowed to happen. And it was them. They were complicit in allowing all of it to happen. And Derek is the one guy who comes out of it and you go, Mitchell Report never mentioned him. These guys never mentioned him. I'm not saying he never did anything. I'm just saying nothing's ever been, implicated. And they're putting him front and center going, look what we have. The NFL does it. The NFL does it with all of its superstars that are clean, quote unquote.
Yeah, it's clean. It's clean up the.
They allow it.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's all I saw. And again, I'm in this area, and I know you guys are Mets fans. So, you know, Mets fans have an issue with Jeter, the ones, a lot of them that I know. Yankee fans, as well, right? I'm the guy in the middle who goes, I just like watching the guy play. Just like David Wright. I just like watching David Wright.
I don't like David Wright. Can't possibly not like watching the guy play. The problem I have with it is, I actually think Jeter doesn't want all this.
I don't think he does. I didn't think he wanted any of that.
But that's why I'm most likely to be commercial. Like, I don't think that he wanted this stuff last night. And that was my problem. And let's just get into the Wainwright thing. That was my problem with Wainwright. Clearly, the guy went through a 94-mile track on the dirt to an 87-mile-an-hour pitch rate on the dirt. I don't even really have a problem with that. I really don't. Because, you know, Channel Park did it with Ripken. I really don't have a problem with it. Jeter went the other way, hit a double, because there's nothing guaranteeing you anything. He's giving him a pitch to hit, still an 87-mile-an-hour fastball. You could make the argument. So my problem was, and I made this comment on Facebook, and I was called an ass at some point, but my point was, it wasn't even Bush League really to throw that pitch. It was so Bush League to admit it, because it almost is like he's so cocky. And I don't think that Wainwright is this guy, but if I'm that guy, it's like, I didn't give up three runs in the first. I gave them that first. Like, why would he even admit that? Why couldn't he have just said, somebody asked him, well, you threw 87, he could have said, what's the first ball of the dirt? My adrenaline was going, at the beginning of the All-Star game, I just wanted to get a strike over. And he took advantage of it. I figured he basically got a strike. Be done with it. Let it be a behind the scenes. You can't, like, pull the curtain down on what's going on publicly. And that's what was Bush League about what he did. It wasn't really Bush League that he threw the pitch. It was Bush League that he admitted it and then try to take it back. He admitted the coverage on after the game. He was, you know, he's one of the best pitchers in the game. He didn't want to admit that he came out and gave up three runs in the first inning. Go ahead.
Can I be the guy there for a sec who feels the need to say this? And I said it to you before the show. I said, let's just say that was Samardzija. Let's say Samardzija was still in a Cup uniform and that was him on the mound. And he admitted after the fact that he gave a cookie to Jeter, which allowed Trout, you know, I mean, I know Cubs cut up that guy, like Cabrera and all, whatever the rest of that. Three-run inning comes out of it. And then Samardzija goes and admits 500 games out of first place with the Cubs.
Oh, yeah.
That he had done it. The first people you would have heard from would have been St. Louis faction coming out saying, this is because the Cubs think. This is because they're
irrelevant.
They think they're not going anywhere or whatever. So the fact that I was irritated by Wainwright, and I'm fine with Wainwright. I'm fine with Molina. They do things perfectly down in St. Louis.
It's a model organization.
It's a model organization
that every team is
right. But to me, it was like it's a personal affront to the guys in your own dugout who you're trying to tell me on one hand that the game matters, which I still don't. I can't wrap my head around that. That it actually matters because then, you know what, there's no reason to have representatives from every team if you're truly trying to get home field advantage. How about the guys on the teams that are actually in the running, that are in that dugout where you're going, dude, you just allow it, you lose 5-3, and you don't even care, you just gave up 3 runs. That was the difference.
Yeah.
And you don't care. That's what bothered me more. And I was trying on my way up here tonight to put the Cubs-Cardinals rivalry out of my head, but that did bother me because when the Cubs lose their temper at Wrigley a few years ago. It was the Reds and it was the Cardinals that were in town, and their announcers saying, this is why it's not a class organization. This is why they're wrong.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This is why they're scumbags.
A little bit different.
And everything else. And so I get tired of that. I get tired of it because the Cardinals are this beacon of light and the Cubs are the darkness. The Cubs are the brutality of losing for 105 years or whatever. And I get exhausted from hearing it. And the fact that it is a Cardinal just says to me what I've always believed. It just reinforces that they think they can just do what they want. And you're supposed to go, hey, you know what? He's got a two birds on a bat on his chest, so he's fine. And if the Cubs had done it, if the Mets had done it,
yeah.
You would have heard from the guys on the Nationals.
Oh,
you would have heard
God,
from all these guys going, that's why Harvey's a bum. That's why the Mets stink. And
what bothered me more than even that, because I'm with you to the point where, like, even though since they've made this transition, whoever has won the All-Star game has won every World Series.
Right.
I just had a problem with the fact that he admitted what he did because it takes away from Jeter.
Yeah.
So now it is, I gave a cookie to this old man who could never hit me in real life.
Right.
That's almost what he was saying. That's why I said it with Bush League. Like, look, I could have struck Jeter out, but I gave him something. It takes everything the moment you tried to give him, you took away from him.
It's like saying
I let my little brother beat me in basketball, but then go tell his girlfriend, like, let him beat me.
Yeah.
He's a little bum. He thinks I could have blocked every shot he took.
I had tweeted right after it happened that I suppose Wainwright's going to tell us that's what they didn't have to set up, and I was just kidding.
And that would have been great if he
was just honestly kidding.
He should have said that.
And then it turns out that's exactly what he's going to tell us. I didn't give him my best up. But if I did it. So what about Trout? Just gets rocked. What about Cabrera? He hit the balls. 500 miles
without even trying. Neil, what do you think about that incident? Was I off base by saying it was a Bush League move by him admitting it? That's like a cardinal sin, no pun intended.
Well, you know, I think the big takeaway is what Dan said. You know, you let Trout hit the triple and then Mickey goes yard on you, like crushes the ball. So, I mean, you know, and what happens when it does come down to the Cardinals and whomever in the World Series that they don't have Game 7 at their place? You know what I'm saying? Like, well, you know, it's just bad all around. I mean, he apologized. I think Wainwright apologized for the comments, but it's like,
yeah,
you know,
it's all over.
I mean, it really does have significance. I mean, as much as we don't think home field advantage plays into it, I don't know. When you have, you know, if it does come down to a big moment and you have the bases loaded or something and the opposing pitcher's on the mound, you have your home team behind you, your fans screaming at, you know, full tilt, you know, it's going to affect the way that you play the game. I mean, you know, did you just mention the Reds versus Pirates? The Pirates were all over Cueto or something like that. I mean, that's just one example. There's plenty where, you know, the crowd can make a difference sometimes. And maybe it's not even the crowd. It can be the field itself. you know, a bigger field versus a smaller field, and I mean the way that you play at home versus on the road, I just don't see why, you know, say he gets Jeter out in that moment, Trout hits a triple, and then you know something happens where Trout's not as pumped, that Jeter's not on base. I mean, who knows what happens if Jeter gets out there? You know, you don't want to put too much emphasis on it, but at the same time, it's like it could be huge for a team down the stretch.
Well, I think I'm a believer in karma. I really am. And I honestly think what we're going to see, the Cardinals are going to be in the World Series. And Wainwright's going to be on the bump on the road game 7. That's just what's going to happen. Because things come around. So he's going to be on the bump on the road game 7 instead of being, you know, in St. Louis. And then we're going to, and that will be the story. And that will be the justice where it will be a fun story to follow. So the day leading up to that game, if that ever happens, how fantastic would that be, Dave?
Well, no,
if Adam Wainwright pitching game 7,
yeah,
knowing one game one,
knowing the Cardinals, they're great. I will never say anything different, but knowing their never-ending run of luck that the Cardinals seem to get every bounce in, by the way, and I know I'm looking through difficulty last year, but he'll probably be out in Oakland, well, which will probably play right into his hands, and he'll throw like a ticket shutout,
well,
and the Cardinals will win another World Series. That's what will probably happen because it's the Cardinals. Who's the Cubs? They go on the road to Fenway and lose 400-1 in game 7, and Samardzija would be the shame of Chicago. He'd be the new partner. That's what would happen. But it's not. It's the Cardinals.
The producer extraordinaire that is Sean Island has said what will happen is they'll be at Yankee Stadium. And I don't even think the Yankees could make the playoffs or make the World Series. But can you adjust the – as a baseball fan right now, knowing the Mets aren't making the playoffs, I don't care what they did to put it on, can you imagine a game 7 – at Yankee Stadium, Wainwright having to face Jeter, and I think they should just put Pat Jeter lead off that day.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, just let him go that lead off in that day, and then everybody on first is just to Derek Jeter.
Yeah.
And Derek Jeter, knowing Derek Jeter would hit a home run and come across home plate and act all business like, and they would say, well, yeah, actually, it would be a 95 mile an hour fastball to paint if the popo over this 220 foot fence they got there right.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is, how good Wainwright is. He's a fantastic pitcher. He has a long way to go before he's in the discussion. He really does if you look at the game before he's in the discussion.
But it started 4 or 5 years.
As a Hall of Famer type. And to think that he felt the need to go easy on Derek Jeter.
Yeah, yeah.
He's batting like 270.
Exactly.
You know, I mean,
if I wanted to, I don't want to embarrass the old man. Take it easy today, Adam.
You know, as great as everybody else in that lineup is, and Cabrera's on his way to Hall of Fame, and Trout is probably on the way, and Cano's probably on the way, but Jeter is the one guy who's going to be there in 5 years. You know what I mean? And to think that Wainwright felt the need to dumb it down for him as though he was pitching to me is insulting to not only Jeter, to me it insults the whole integrity of that game that I don't think matters
anymore.
Because at the end of the day, if you remember, if you look back in history books, you know, that was clear, but in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, the guys who started the All-Star game played the whole freaking game because it didn't matter to those guys.
It did.
Willie Mays played 9 innings in like 19 All-Star. So if you want to tell me the game matters, you start Jeter, then you take Jeter out, you put in Ramirez, he's having a good year, and you run Trout, you run Cabrera, and Bautista, and all those guys the whole freaking game. It doesn't matter. I mean, the home field advantage thing to me, I heard yesterday there's been 5 since 91 that won 7 games. There's been 5 World Series since 91 that won 7 games. And last year, if you look at the Red Sox, they pitched better.
Yeah.
It didn't matter where the games were being played necessarily. Their pitching was great, pitching wins, so they won.
Yeah.
So to me, it's just another case of me getting my ire up at the Cardinals, who I constantly, and the Cardinals would never do this if the Cubs were good. The Cardinal fans will never admit when the Cubs were good. 05, 06, 07, they never would ever say the Cubs were getting lucky. So here I am, hating on them again now, when I just got over it a couple years ago. Like, Neil, am I completely off base with that my hatred for the Cardinals is back now? Like, it has been kind of in remission, I guess. And now it's right up at the surface, and I just loathe them all over again.
I mean, I don't understand how it ever went away. I'm glad to see it back. You know, I mean, the only time I don't know that I would ever cheer for the Phillies. I mean, maybe if they're playing the Taliban, like it's some kind of scenario where Al-Qaeda comes in, they got 9 to field the team. I mean, I don't even – that would be tough for me to go against the Phillies. And it's for me, for when they made their trip to the World Series and when they were successful, it just – it there's nothing the Phillies can do that can really get me on board. I mean, there was a cameo on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia by Chase Utley that I thought was very humorous, but at the same time I was hoping that maybe a light from the set would come and crush his skull. So, I mean, it's tough for me to wrap my head around a time when that when you could actually not hate the Cardinals.
Well, I'll put it this way. It has become the hammer and the nail, that rivalry. I mean, they see each other often, but the same one always wins. I mean, the Cubs are, as you so eloquently put it last week, they're irrelevant. They're in the dark ages of baseball, and they do nothing right, it seems, and hopefully they're turning the page. But the Cardinals are great. The Cardinals are great. Mike said it in his app. They're the model franchise in Major League Baseball. And the Cubs are nobody. And so that's why I guess it's kind of died, because seeing the Cubs win there this year, I think it was like 17-6 at Busch Stadium, watching their fans leave, that was like the closest I'm going to get to really enjoying beating the Cardinals. Like, that's what I have now. There's not going to be these late postseason games like the Mets had just a few years ago with the Cardinals when Chavez made that great catch and all that. Like, the Cubs just don't have that. The Cubs just aren't on their level right now. So I guess it's kind of died down, but, I mean, I always rooted against them. But seeing this yesterday, I actually was getting irritated. I was watching the game, and then I see Wainwright's comments coming through on my phone, and I'm looking at things, and I'm going, this SOB has the gall to now say that he's just laying cookies in there for major league hitters, as though he's Tom Seaver. Like, he just thinks he's, you know, his stuff doesn't stink. And I got very aggravated. I will admit that. I got very aggravated about it. I'm going, you know what, I'm back to hating everything about the Cardinals. I'm back to hating
Every club needs a spark, right? Be, you know, with the Mets, they've kind of turned things around lately. They're 8-2 in their last 10, and, you know, yet to think that maybe Granderson's part of that. You know, something happened. Something suggested something. Something set it off in their head. And I think for the Cubs, it's like, don't you want to ruffle some feathers? Literally, ruffle the Cardinals' feathers. This is a team that has been superior to you for the past, I don't know how many years. Why don't you get in their head a little bit? Dust them off. Dust them off the plate. I mean, you know, put a hard tag on them. I mean, this is what I don't understand about a lot of professional sports nowadays. And maybe you're seeing the return of it now, you know, with Richard Sherman, but get a little feisty out there. I mean, it's almost a little too, you know, a little too sportsmanlike. I mean, you know, if you're the Cubs, you're kind of out of it this year. So why not just throw caution into the wind and start getting really, really rowdy with the Cardinals? I don't know. Maybe it's that Midwest, you know, manners that they've got going on. But I just think that, you know, it's high time that they just started taking it to the Cardinals. I think everyone should start taking it to the Cardinals, because right now they're sitting on a pedestal, right? They're polishing their ring. And so for you to think that you're going to compete with them on their level, probably not going to happen. So start using some tactics. Get a little strategery going right now, and maybe get a little wild, get a little nuts, because, if you can't beat them at your own game, then try and take them down a peg and make them come down to your level.
Well, you know, a couple of things that have struck me the last few years, I mean, you really had the kind of teams that are kind of the thorn in your side. The Reds have been that way. You had the Molina-Phillips disagreement. You've had the Brewers upsetting the Braves last year and all kinds of things going on. I watched the game before the break when the Cubs were in Cincy, and Chapman threw a couple of 102-mile-an-hour fastballs over Shields' head. I was looking at that game, and I saw Rizzo take umbrage with that, and Rizzo stepped up to the dugout, and he was screaming all kinds of expletives at Chapman, and then he goes out to throw rounders around the infield, and when the Reds started saying things to him, he walked, threw his hat, threw his glove down, walked right towards the Reds' dugout, and one of the first things, my hand to God, that struck me was, why don't they get this jacked up playing the Cardinals? Because it seems like their games are very prim and proper. That has always struck me, but I think a lot of that is because, I mean, how big can your britches get when you're not as good as the guy you're getting mad at? I mean, there's nothing they can do about it.
That's when your identity changes. When you say, which is, I have to think about the difference, when you say, that's it, I know they're better than us, but we're not going to take this crap anyway. That's what the Cubs need to do.
Well, yeah, I understand your point, but it's also, that's football. I mean, you can actually get in there and say, no, we might not beat these guys, but we're going to take Tom Brady's leg off. I would love to see
the Phillies did it to the Mets. That's exactly what the Phillies did to the Mets when the Mets had that collapse in 07, they started talking trash. I mean, I hated it. I hated every second of it, and I hated it. I didn't start hating the Phillies until 2007. The Phillies were always starting. So, but that was the moment when they just started being like, forget the Mets. We're the team to beat. And you're like, shut up. You're 7 games out. 7 games up. And they got this moxie to them. And that's what you, I mean, Phillies just come down.
Well, Phillies are very
I know this is collegiate sports D3, but we used to have games where we'd be on each side of the coin, right? We would play teams where it's like we were the top dog, and so other teams would start to yap and talk and maybe play a little more physical, as physical as you can get in baseball, brush your back, talk a little bit, you know, catcher talking to the batter, first baseman talking to the base runner. I mean, we had guys, you know, Muhlenberg and teams like that that wanted to fight us on the field. And, you know, it got in our heads a little bit. I mean, we ended up winning the game, but, I mean, it definitely distracts you. It takes you off your course and your routine. It's something that's unexpected, and I think that, you know, if anyone wants to, you know, if Wainwright is going to say these things and he's going to act this way, then I think you need to really stick it to him and take it to him in more ways than one. It's not just proving yourself on the field, but maybe, like, giving him a jab here and there and talking a little bit on the field and round them up and, you know, seeing how they respond. Have the Cardinals been riled up ever? I don't know. I don't know that it's ever happened.
I think that the guy to do it is, you know, because they're in a pennant race right now with the Brewers. When Carlos Gomez steps in the box with Adam Wainwright and he takes in the yard, he better go all the way around and that, you know, just talking to him the entire way around. And I know you don't like that stuff.
No, but that's the thing, though, what you're talking about. You're talking about the Phillies getting the Mets going. And you're talking about, if I remember correctly, Jimmy Rollins had things to say. I remember Ryan Howard said some things.
It was mostly Rollins.
But
yeah.
You're talking about guys that have MVP awards, guys that have some kind of cachet. I mean,
Castro's got enough cachet.
But Castro doesn't say two words.
Yeah.
He barely does post-game interviews. I mean, his English is fine. He just really doesn't. That's what I like about seeing Rizzo getting worked up is Rizzo – is, for all intents and purposes, good enough.
He's probably not, too.
To step up, absolutely. He stepped up, and you know what? I don't know if you guys saw it. He threw his glove down, threw his hat down, and was like, who wants to fight right now? Like, that's essentially what it was, and it was Simon came out of the dugout, which, that's a big bear right there, and then finally Chapman came out, and Rizzo was just telling him, F you, man, I'll go right now. You want to go right now? Let's go right now. That's good, but I mean, when you're the Cubs, and you... I don't know if Donald Barney's going to play today. Wellington Castillo is
probably going to be part of it.
Travis Woods probably afraid of his own shadow. I mean, you don't have that cast of characters. Jimmy Rollins is a good enough ball player to say, you know what, Mets, you stink. Watch what we're going to do. And like you said, you're 5, 6, 7 games out, wherever you are. You stink. We're better than you watch.
Yeah.
He's good enough to do that. I mean, you're right. Starlin is good enough, but he doesn't really stink. He gets killed in Chicago for not doing interviews. He doesn't even do interviews with Spanish-speaking outlets.
Yeah.
He's very to himself, and Rizzo is the outspoken guy. He's kind of the leader of that team, de facto, probably. But
I mean, man, I'll be invited to come up with me to face that thing.
I hope so.
That's the guy. That's the guy right there. Well, that's the entire takeaway, and it's a shame because you can think of this as a baseball game, and there was no outside stuff. It's a very well-played baseball game between just stars of the game. You talk about watching the game on mute. You just watched that game on mute. Didn't know all the outside things going on, but it is baseball. This is fantastic baseball. Good plays, defensive plays on both sides. You know, there was tense situations. Well, as a Mets fan, you get Danny Murphy up there with first and second down 2 runs and 81-mile-an-hour change up chase him. You watch that game, you would think, like, this is as good a baseball as you're going to see, which is the point of the All-Star. But it's all the hoopla that comes from Fox and the ESPN and all the media outlets that is, you know, have all their field reporters and this and that yapping in your ear about what you're supposed to be paying attention to, instead of watching the fact that Miguel Cabrera is one of the greatest hitters of all time.
Yeah.
And Mike Trout is one of the best young hitters I've seen since, like, Griffey. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's what you should watch the game for. But that's why a lot of times I watch these games on mute on my iPad, because I'm watching, you know, Pocahontas or something on my television, my daughter. And you almost appreciate it more. You're not hearing, and you're thinking to yourself, like, what, you know, this is what I heard you saying. If I'm, you know, you don't know what the announcer is saying. So I like that aspect of it. But, you know, as an All-Star game goes, it was a very entertaining All-Star game. The idea that it matters now, eventually they're going to have to change that, I think. they're going to have to change it back to something else, make something else be the deciding factor. I still think now that you're playing an interleague game every day of the season, just make it best record overall. Because you're all playing the other league. It used to be American League was the American League, passing, so there's no way to be the differentiating factor. Just have the best record.
No,
you home field advantage. I don't get it.
That's what I mean. That's how it is. Hockey, that's how it is.
Because they all play each other, but baseball didn't. Now they do. There you go. Why do I think that's any more complicated than that? I think when a new commissioner comes in, it's like that's what's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Bob Costas.
The thing that would intrigue me would be just to know from the players.
Maybe one of our skills competitions would be the side effect.
That could be it. But I would like, I want to know from the players if they're cool with the setup. I would just like to know if they interviewed the players, told them whatever. You guys like ALNL or, you know, because I know the NHL shoot around with, the world versus North America and all that stuff. I mean, is there something they could do to the All-Star game that would pump it up a little bit more? If you had,
once you got rid of the,
If you had
30 and under, 30 and over, something like that.
30 and under versus 30 and over. If you had the world versus
whatever the cutoff is, just take whatever. Get the roster still are constant the same way, and then the cutoff is the average age is 28. The old timers are always whoever's over the cutoff, and then the newcomers.
Because the fact
that would be a great thing.
After
an idea machine today. Yeah, first you had the double play idea, and I had this one.
After Steele's idiotic display in Milwaukee about All-Star game ending in a tie, the All-Star game needed something. And that's when they went to, you know, now it matters or whatever. But it's stupid. And it's stupid because of the fact that you have guys on the Cubs, you have guys on last place teams deciding what the Cardinals, Red Sox, hopefully the Yankees are going to be doing. It's stupid.
Yeah.
So, I mean, maybe they change it up. Maybe the players will go, you know what, I would love to take all of us 25 guys over 30 and play the young dudes and see what happens and just have some fun with it. Or if they did a draft, that would be really cool. Like they have done now with, you know, the NHL, and I think, the NFL, they had Sanders and Rice pick the teams, right?
Yeah.
Stuff like that would be cool to me if you took this year, you took, like, Jeter and you took Tula and you go, pick your team. That, stuff like that would be more interesting to me because I don't think the game should matter. I think it should be, if these two teams in the World Series, one had 94 and one had 92, you start off with 94 teams apart. That's how it should be. It should matter to the teams that are there, not to the guys that their season was over 4 months ago because they were 40 games out of first place. So that's how I feel about it. But it was, to your point, nice game, well played, loved the players I got to see. It was good. Great setup in Minnesota. It was awesome.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to do the series. But before that, I got to tell you, we had a former guy in here, James Peter. Connecticut School of Broadcast, he came in, helped us out for a couple months. Now he's like making 30 to 30 revenue. We used to call him the meal ticket because he thought he was the guy that was going to take us to the next level. And he was like a little fly, he's like a shooting star. He was there for a couple of months. But I haven't talked to James Peter in a year. And he called me last night during the All-Star game to give me a stat about Derek Jeter, which I haven't really heard reported today. You know, I don't know. He said he heard it somewhere and then he did some research on it. I will tell you this about Derek Jeter. Put a ball in Derek Jeter's conversation. And this is not, it's a little awful what we're talking about, but this, he's great. Like, 2,685 games. He passed, just this past week, he had 1,000 multi-hit games.
Yep.
In 2,685 games. So 37% of his games that he's played, two or more hits.
Did you see who else was on that list? It's remarkable.
He also sent me the list.
They're all Hall of Famers except for Pete Rose.
Pete Rose, 1,225. Sandman Musial, 1,057. And Hank Aaron, 1,046. No other active player is even close. So, I mean, nobody's over 800 or 80, whatever it is. So, nobody's that close to it. And Pete Rose, just as like an example, so Pete Rose did it in 3,562. So, he's almost 1,000 games more than him. And so, that stat right there, talking about what he does and people want to cover defensive stats into the starting stat and all these different things. That stat right there, you're talking about a guy that has multiple hits in 37% of his games. More than one out of three games he goes in there, he's going to give you more than one hit.
Yeah. You're preaching.
For a 2,650 game career.
You're preaching to the choir. Because I'm on the pro Jeter side. I mean, I saw that stat on the Yankee broadcast and it blew my mind. It really did. He got his 1,000th multi-hit game, I think it was in Minnesota, right? And it's just, it's stupid. to think about 1,000 games with multiple hits.
Yeah.
And that's not just two hits.
I mean, some of the other guys on the list, I mean, Wade Boggs was being like a great pure hitter, 885 all-day game. Rod Crew, 896. George Brett, 903. Willie Mays, 922. You know, Ruth is nowhere on this list. You know, all those other games are great. Mantle, DiMaggio, they're not on this list. The closest one that didn't get there was Molitor, 967. Wynn, 951. Like, none of them are close. That's an insane statistic.
Yeah.
So, like, just to put a bow on it, the idea that what Wainwright did was frustrating me. It wasn't that he gave him the cookie. It's that his last shining moment, unless the Yankees go on some run, in that moment that we discussed that we all love to see, this Game 7, you know, Wainwright in Yankee Stadium, which would be a godsend, doesn't happen. Like, his last moment is going to be, when they're talking about it 20 years from now, is going to be where he got to a game, but Wainwright admitted that he gave him a cookie. Embarrassing. And it's a shame to a guy like Jeter because we know how the news cycle works out. We know how it works.
And it comes from, comparatively to Jeter, a great pitcher who's a relative nobody compared to him. I mean, this guy's going down as one of the greats. Wainwright can get there.
He's not going to get there. He's going to be one of the greats. He's not going to be talking with Roger Clemens and Tom Seaver.
No, I mean, but if you're going to put guys like Koufax and then the Hall of Fame, Robin Roberts, guys like that that have, you know, smaller kind of.
Wainwright has a chance of being an Hall of Fame pitcher.
That's what I'm saying. Compared to Jeter,
he's nothing.
It's a nobody. He's a speck in the universe, and he's doing this to this guy. I mean, it'd be one thing if he did it to like Altuve. He goes, you know what? He's first off the game, whatever. It's all like laying one in there.
Yeah.
But to do it to Jeter and imply in some way that he needed your assistance is absolutely absolutely.
It would be like I made this comment earlier in the show about Pete Rose, about our interview with Pete Rose and Anthony. He was like throwing the ball and like, oh, Anthony got fired. And we gave them a bone. We let him have the Pete Rose. You know what I mean? Like, we gave him a bone. Like, I just let him have it. We're out right now.
I have a quick question. We're going to break this.
Yeah. Rack and rock.
Quick question. Does either one of you just have an open championship pick? Do you have anybody? I know you guys aren't huge golf fans.
Tiger Woods.
Neil, you got a pick for the open championship off the top of your head?
Dustin Johnson.
Dustin Johnson.
Who do you got?
Angel Cabrera.
Angel
Cabrera is my guy. He's got a Masters, the U.S. Open. He won the Greenbrier 2 weeks ago. Going with Angel.
We're going to do some Ragnarok. We're right back. We're going to do a little bonus time, I'm assuming, here. We've got to give Neil his due. With his due to you serious. We're right back. We're going to try to see Sports Center.
Is anyone out there? This is the Nathaniel County Sheriff's Office. Is anyone out there? We were surrounded by the dead. They weren't rioters, what we were told. We have survivors here. Civilians, women, children. If anyone out there.
Follow the story in the Ragnarok Rising Saga by D.A. Roberts. Available on Amazon, Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, and BooksAMillion.com. Visit RagnarokRising.Weebly.com.
All right, we're back. Tri-State Sports Guys. Check us out as always, TriStateSportsGuys.com. Facebook.com/TriStateSportsGuys or @Tri-State_Sports on Twitter. Appreciate all of our followers. The Pete Rose gave us a nice little boost there on Twitter. This is nice.
Very nice.
We got Facebook is cooking, you know, moving and shaking there. People call me an ass. We got all that. But now, this is how we pay the bills. We have a guy here who's just making moves on a comedy scene.
He's big time.
It's our main man, Neil Lynch. And now, he's going to give us a little segment we call Duty Serious, where he fans the globe of the internet to give us the most enticing stories. And we don't know what he's going to give us. He's going to comment on them. Love it. Neil, what do you got for us, dude?
Let's stick with Derek Jeter. F it. He apparently is a secret, either completely owns or is a part owner of an underwear company that has that accentuates the bulge. One and two has a little mini pocket, little pouch for your condoms. Now, why would Derek Jeter be a secret? Keep this a secret.
Well, the common thing to me is a way to, he should market that. That's like a big. He shouldn't be marketing that. The six rates and bowls may be the reason why he wants to get out. You don't want to be in the penis pump game. You know what I'm saying? You're in the power penis pump game. So the extent of your bowls is something you might not want to be a part of, but the hidden condom thing, I think maybe when he retires, he's ready to be that guy.
Well, you know, I mean, Johnson, truthfully, I just had a discussion about a week ago with a friend of mine.
Condom-filled underwear?
Exactly.
We're friend of mine.
We're actually discussing what Skeeter's going to do when he retires. Maybe this is what the road he's going down. I wouldn't have guessed that. I thought maybe he goes into the big business. But
how do you know this is not big business? You're talking about the pet rock.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's...
We should probably reach out and see if he wants to get on board with our skill set. I think we always did it.
I do. We all might be able to watch that.
We saw him. That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
Wayne Wright said, I think it was Cookie. You know what? Because of his great career, we as the Tri-City Sports guys, we want to involve him. Just to get paid tribute.
Yeah.
We'd love to have him on board.
About 4 months' time, he's going to be down on his luck. You know, going to try to figure out how to spend $250 million, and we'll go into business mode.
Yeah,
selling big, bold things and highlight tapes, and then there'll be stuff that we're going to do. I don't know what the hell we're doing, but what we'll do.
It's happening. I like it. I like everything about it. What do you think about it, Neil? You got into those boxes?
Relationship, Neil, still needs an edge. You know, I feel like she's going to leave me at any second, so I got to, like, keep up appearances a little bit because I let the body go. So, you know, I feel like I still got to – I got to keep the mood – I got to keep her in the mood. And if it's going to take $100 a pair high-tech underwear, I mean, I got to give it a look. I got to give it a trial run to see what see what's up. I mean, you know, I'll contribute to his bank account, I guess. I'm not a fan, but, you know, no disrespect with two as a yes, but I'll look into it.
All right. What else you got, dude?
Well, an Argentinian soccer player, football player, during the Netherlands game, he just tore his anus, tore his butthole right up, rip.
How did that
now
occur?
Now I think I've almost done this, and I'd go on a limb and say that Michael, maybe you almost had this happen. But when you slide, if you slide incorrectly or you're in a weird surface, the butt cheek, one of them can go get caught the surface, and then the other one can keep going a little bit. I feel like if you land too hard, like you don't slide at an appropriate angle, that butthole ripping is very probable. And I think I've come close.
I will tell you this. You know I'm not a guy with a 2-point on hard day. You know that.
Oh,
especially when talking about baseball.
Of course not.
But I will put my pop-up slide skills against just about anyone.
I never did a pop-up
slide. I'm a pop-up slide guy. I was a big believer in the pop-up slide. I was taught it at like 12 years old by a coach of mine, and I was always a pop-up guy. So I feel like my sliding technique was always there. I was not a head-first guy.
No. I would say this. I was an impeccable slider. I never agree with the pop-up because I catch your ankle.
I never caught my ankle.
No, but you could. It's easier, safer. I understand the reason people.
I was team first, Dan.
Yeah.
I wanted to get to third base.
Yeah. Who do you think stole more base?
Who, yeah. We went in, like, high school, college.
Anyway.
I led my team in steals my sophomore year in college. I think I got more steals than me in college. Definitely. High school-wise, I was always on second base or third base. I don't really remember.
Yeah, that was I just hit a lot of singles. Yeah.
You remember spray guy.
Yeah.
You and Steve Rubbers.
Yeah, I just sprayed it
around. What else you got, dude?
Real quick battle. Michael Irvin versus Chris Carter. Who do you got? Both as a person and as a football player, who would you rather have on your team, or who would you rather pal around with? The reason I'm asking is because Chris Carter, it just came out that Michael Irvin revealed that Chris Carter approached Michael Irvin's wife and told her to leave him because of his cocaine problems, and now Carter's coming down on, I don't know who it is, pick someone, Manziel, Sully, Josh Gordon. And so now Irvin's coming to Gordon's defense. Who you got? Carter or Irvin?
Well, and we're going to go into bonus time now if you're listening live. So you got to check us out on the replay in about an hour. But I'm going to say, before you even told me that last thing, I'm taking Michael Irvin. I just find Chris Carter to be such a phony, preacher-type guy. Whenever he's on Mike and Mike or he's on ESPN at any time, I just feel like, and I find both of them kind of annoying, but I feel like Michael Irvin is at least a little more honest with his himself.
Well, he's honest about some of the mistakes he's made.
Well, so is Carter. Yeah. Carter says he's honest with him. He's honest. They're both of them are honest with their crazy past. But I just find, and you're talking about who I want to would rather on my be on my team. I think it'd be Michael Irvin. I think he's a more fun guy to hang out with than fun to be.
But if you're talking about like a coach, like you're trying to build the best team, or who you would want.
Well, I think I thought of it as a teammate, right, Neil? Is that what you're asking? As a teammate, both as like a teammate as a player. But if you're playing with one of the guys.
Who would you rather have on your team? And then, you know, if you want to figure a step further, you know, who would you rather want to, like, pal around with on a town? I mean, obviously, I think the answer you name is off the field. It's got to be Irvin. But
Michael Irvin on both accounts, in my opinion, Neil. Both accounts. On my team, I'd rather have Michael Irvin. And I'd just pal around with it. I would take Michael Irvin. I find Chris Carter to be annoying. It'd be one of those, like, just, you know, like, wants to hear himself talk.
Also, as both of them are, but as a Vice fan, he was very belittling. There's a lot of stories about that, for especially younger receivers, younger offensive guys.
So, he missed it.
Yeah, I'm not so sure he's the guy you want to be the young wideout coming up, and he's the guy you're looking up to.
Which means as a quarterback, even, you wouldn't want to even throw to him. You know what I mean? I'm sure both of those guys are divas, but, you know, I don't even mind.
Yeah. I would rather be buddies with Michael Irvin. Probably
got a lot more fun. Number better size. You have big knot. I mean, what do you got, Neil? You're a football. You're the only collegiate football player on the squad here. Who would you rather be a teammate with?
Boy, I tell you what. I mean, timing route, it's Irvin. But if I'm inside the red zone, I mean, I'm looking Carter's way all the way. All he does is catch touchdowns. So I think if I'm going to pad stats, I don't know, maybe I got to go Carter. I mean, and I say that out of frustration because the Giants have such a horrible red zone percentage right now that I just want a guy who catches touchdowns. So as annoying and preachy as Carter can get, I mean, the dude makes some serious catches sometimes and maybe even, you know, can act as a mentor to a young Randy Moss. I don't know. I think maybe I got to go Carter on this one, on the field.
All right, what else you got, dude?
Much has been made about how Justin Verlander was not at the All-Star game. Instead, he was vacationing in Mexico with Kate Upton. Here's a question for you. Would you rather go be selected to the All-Star game, quite possibly your only All-Star game, and maybe go 0-for-1, but hey, you got in the game? Or would you rather vacation in Mexico with – now, we're talking single status here. Because before you met the love of your life, your love of your life doesn't exist.
Even with the love of my life, I will tell you, I'm taking the Kate Upton. But, without a doubt, Kate Upton is my number one in the world right now. My number one. The idiots that say that she's, you know, too curvy and all that, that's the hottest girl that's walking this gorgeous planet Earth we have. It's Kate Upton. And I'm taking that trip. I saw those pictures on Barstool. I'm going to Kate Upton to the beach, dude. And I think my wife would understand.
I don't think your wife would understand.
She would be hip to it.
I would take the All-Star game. And I'm basing it on the fact that these players can get, I mean, Verlander, if he gets anybody he wants. I would venture to say most of those big
games. He can get anybody he wants. It's Kate Upton. That's the number one girl. Maybe she's dating somebody.
Yeah, but
maybe she still is.
He can get somebody close.
Nah, that's close. Not that close.
Whoever my number one would be, I could get someone close by the Justin Verlander. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? It's not like he's walking around like he's Cary Grant. You know, drugs here. So I would take the All-Star game. I'd have that story. And then I'd also be like,
you could jump around with Andy McCutcheon during the Home Run Derby. Real cool.
Yeah. And then
you could strike out like Murph. And then, yeah, I was in an All-Star game. What does that get you?
Well, how about this?
I'd rather tell my grandkids I went on a Bahamas cruise with Kate Upton, wherever she was on the beach there.
Fine.
Then I was in the All-Star. Remember when Jeter got that cookie and he hit the other way? I was in that game. I struck out. But
see, I'm looking at this way. Down the line, I can either say, these are all the great – here's my list of chicks I would play. and here's an also game I went to. Or here's I was with Kate Upton, and I never went to an also.
Joe DiMaggio is one of the best hitters of all time. People still, some people on Earth only remember, like, oh, that was the guy that was married to Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, I only remember.
There are people like that.
I only remember that Marilyn Monroe's Aaron Judson. That's all I remember, because she was one of the hottest chicks who ever was on this planet.
Yeah.
And she's hanging out with Joe D. What are you kidding me? I mean, he's probably worse looking than Truman Capote.
I mean, he was not
sick. No, he's an ugly guy.
But I'm just saying, like, you dated a girl that came up and it immortalizes you.
No, it doesn't. It
sure does.
Because she is unbelievably gorgeous. But what immortalizes Justin Verlander is the fact that he's a phenomenal pitcher, typically. And I know he's not having a great year.
To
the sports fan.
That's 25% of the population.
Who do you think Justin Verlander would be going out with? I'll ask both of you. If he wasn't going out with Kate Upton, you think he's going out with a girl who looks like me, Sam Peters? He's going out with a 10, wherever
a
he is.
A 10, but not 10. He's going out with some girls, like, when, you know, is on Maxim, or, like, you might know vaguely.
Fine.
He's pretty. Well, then that's going to be some name you never remember, and you can't tell somebody. He's not going to marry Kate Upton. He's not going to be married 20 years from now. But he can tell his grandkids, David Kate Upton, who's going to be remembered for eons and eons. There's going to be some time capsule on Mars and 500 years, and you're like, this woman walked the planet in 2014 her name's Kate Upton.
You're being crazy.
And Justin Verlander dated her, and you're talking about some, you know, some Russian girl who's in Maxim, like, you know, out of 50 of the Eastern Bloc. I mean, what are we talking about?
You're being unreasonable. That's all you're being. Because the fact of the matter is, knowing you, if your career ended and you did not have an All-Star game on your resume, not that your wife's not a sweetheart, beautiful lady, but it would bother you that you didn't have to. You'd be like, look at my wife, my beautiful daughter. And they go, what about that All-Star game? And you'd be like, God almighty. You're really sticking it to me.
It's all about stars.
They just go on Wikipedia. They put in Michael DePalma. They find out his career.
No, Baseball Reference. There's no
AS. There's no All-Star game. That would bother you. Because it would bother Neil.
But I think the All-Star game's a meaningless thing. So that could be like, well, Bryce Harper got the All-Star game.
Still an experience you want. That's all I'm saying. You can get that experience, and then you're still Justin Verlander. You're still he lives in the Detroit suburbs, and he's going out with Kate Upton. So with that said, he could get chicks no matter where he is.
Here's my thing. I have a lot of confidence in my baseball ability. I don't have that same type of confidence in my female ability. So I would feel like if somebody questioned my ability, you're going to make an All-Star game, I'm great. I'd like, well, where are you going to pitch me? I could hit it anywhere. But he's going to ask me about, like, who's your date? I'm like, well, I dated this girl. She worked at a O'Neill's pub. She's cute. She worked Tuesdays and Thursdays. She didn't have the weekend. She had to do the next cute. That would be a problem.
You're being crazy.
Neil, where would you go, dude? You'd rather be an all-star than go on a beach with Kate Upton?
Oh, brother. I mean, so many different thoughts and feelings in my body, in my mind. I mean, here's my thought.
Back to being 12 years old, Neil.
I'm going to go back. I'm going to get a little weird with it. I think if I could somehow swing, if I had the charm and the personality of Johnny Manziel, it's like, yeah, I'm just going to go play in an all-star game, and then I'm going to round up like five Kate Upton clones and then go somewhere even more tropical. But I'm saying, I don't know. You know, Justin Verlander, I mean, if he wasn't in that commercial with Kate Upton, I don't think he would be with Kate Upton. But he was able. He got the opportunity and he took it. And I think that you know, for him to find another Kate Upton, I don't know. It's tough. But I mean,
that's
what
I think. That's what I think Danny's getting. I think because I'll tell you, Nick Cannon, who I could care less about Nick Cannon, but he was on Howard Stern a year ago or whatever. He's talking about Mariah Carey. And he was like, you don't understand. This is a girl that I, like, idolize. So the first time you hook up with, you know, she wants to go on a date with you, you hook up with Mariah Carey. There's prettier girls than Mariah Carey. But, like, that was his person. So that, like, right there is a moment you can't expect. And that's Kate Upton. You know what I'm saying? So there are, you're talking about these other hot girls. I get that. There's hot girls everywhere.
But we know that this is Verlander's Mariah Carey. I'm being serious. I don't
know. I'm talking about, man, I don't know what it is. I'm thinking it's Mike DePalma. And I go 100 miles an hour and have a 5.10 ERA. I'm going with Kate Upton than having at all. Even if it was my own, like, I'm Mike DePalma.
Okay. we still agree to disagree then, because I would take the All-Star game and know that you're slaying unbelievable girls on the side.
That's fine.
That's exactly what he's going to do. Kate Upton's not my thing that I want to do. I'd love to go to an All-Star game. You know, I'll go marry some chick who's gorgeous. Like, that's how that works for these guys. They live in this fairy tale
world.
Yeah, you
know, Chris Benson, Mary Anderson, started to shoot you in the face or whatever.
Yeah, well, he's not as good as work with.
Yeah, most extremely hot girls are horrible people. I'm sure she is, too. I have no idea. But in my mind, I'm taking that trip.
Okay.
I'm finding out myself. At least I know, my heart of hearts, that it wasn't meant to be. I know I'm that trip.
And then, like, 25 years later, we run into each other at a bar or something like that. Okay? And you're no longer with Kate Upton.
Yeah.
Didn't work out.
And I say, well, yeah, and I dumped Kate Upton. That's a better story than any.
And I'm looking at you going, you know, I still have that all stuff.
Yeah. Well, I dumped Kate Upton.
It's going to bother you on some level. I guarantee it. That's all I'm saying. It would bother me a lot. To be a good ball player and not get that all-star game out, you're still going out with gorgeous money. That's all I'm saying. If I was a 210 hitter for my career who had a 290 first half and I made an all-star game, that might be different. I mean, you know, my career stunk anyway, so I'll take Tate up and I'll do that. But if you're a guy who's a legit
ball player. There's a lot of garbage players that have all-star games.
That's true.
A lot.
That's true. But I'm saying, I would. There's gorgeous women you can be going out with, and he still has the all-star game.
Well,
I'm
going
to rough you. What are you going to do?
Killing one of my fans. All right, Neil, what else you got?
You
got anything else for us?
The last article was about this, I don't know if you saw it, this ultra marathon runner, which it's just the fact that you need to run more than a marathon upsets me. But this ultra marathon runner got struck by lightning, still was able to run the last 40 miles and take third place. Hey, that's not a human being. We all know that. B, how much would you take to run an ultramarathon? I mean, how much would you need? What would it be? Money? Would it be fame? Would it be women? Would it be liquor? What do you need to actually run and complete an ultramarathon? Regardless of getting struck by freaking lightning bolt.
So let me ask you this. First of all, you have to run the whole thing? So I have to train and do all that to get to be able to run 50 miles or whatever it is? Or do
I mean, I feel like you can't stop. Maybe you can walk a little bit, but you just cannot stop once. Maybe if you got struck by lightning.
I mean, I don't know that I could run 3 miles.
I would need a hearse. That's what I would need.
50 miles is, I mean, it's only like 35 miles from the Yankee Stadium. From where we live in Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
Yankee Stadium is not close.
No.
You live, what, 10 miles away from where I live, and I couldn't drive the air out. But I think if you were to tell me, give me $100,000, you wouldn't do it for $100,000.
I couldn't do it. That's the point. I would do it for
$100,000,
but I can't.
I'm not sure
I can't,
because the look on his face is like,
I do it. Yeah, I mean, the driveway here at the end of the studio was gone.
I'm
exhausted. So what do you want me to tell you? I mean, I would love to be in great shape and do this, but I just know that I couldn't. So that's what it comes down to for me. I would love all the things in the law, money, women, booze, whatever, fame. I'd love to have all that, but I physically can't. I can't run probably two or three miles.
I remember dreading the mile run in college. I had to do it for part of our thing, like a mile. I did that 50 times. And not stopping, I would say $100,000, you know, which I think is pretty reasonable. That's an insane amount of money.
And you're going to run the whole thing?
Well, not stop. He said I could walk a little bit. I don't even know if I can walk 50 miles right now.
I don't think you could.
You would have to train to be able to walk.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would commit like a month to my life to like, probably more than a month.
It has to be more than a month. Not because you're out of shape, but dude, you know the kind of shape you got to be
in? How far
are you this crap?
50 miles here to Hartford.
Yeah.
The world was on the border of New York.
Not even close. I'd love to be up for this challenge. I appreciate Neil offering this.
It's like losing heart stuff. Like,
yeah.
How many miles a day did they go? They walked across the whole country.
And they had guys. They had people helping.
They're on a horse.
You know what I'm saying? Who they have? Sakajewia?
They had Sakajewia was part of the team.
Yeah, she helped out more than probably Lewis and Clark ever let on. Because women's lives didn't come along for a long time.
No,
they didn't give her any credit.
And she's a minority. That was
awesome. Yeah.
So, yeah.
I need somebody like that to carry me.
But if it's just me going 60 miles nonstop, you're going to be really walking. I think I need $100,000, Neil. $100,000, I can get that done. You get a sponsor, and I'll do it. Neil, how many – what would it take you? I feel like you're in better shape than either me or Danny.
I ran 3 miles on the treadmill yesterday, and I sounded like a wounded animal. I sounded like I'd been shot with a harpoon, and I was bleeding out. And the moment I hit the 3 mile mark, it's like I fell on my face, and I needed to be carried to the locker room. It was embarrassing. I don't know what's going on. What this girl's doing to me? She's packing on all the love pounds, making me eat all the food, trying to diet. But I'm telling you, this guy had to run 100 miles. So take your 50 miles and then double it.
Well, 100 miles. 100 miles like here to Philly.
Right? That's like
Philly's like 120 miles.
That's like a humpback whale migration. That's what it strikes me as. And I would love to be up for the stats, but I can't walk from here to the other side of Norwalk. So what do you want me to tell
you? You can't afford yourself a drink.
No, I'm exhausted. I sent you yesterday. I sent you and Cowboy and Coach Island, you guys, a link to Whippleball Park.
Yeah.
Right? And the first thing I thought to myself was, I'm going to have to be like the Bob Hamlin of this team and just be the guy who comes off the bench like, hey, you know what? Mike's struggling, Cowboys. Somebody put me in. Give me one at bat because I go, it's hot on August 2nd.
We'll
I'm done.
We'll play the iPod like come
yeah.
out like you.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm going to be the mini Minoso that day. I'll come off the bench. I'll give you a swing.
100 miles? I got it all the
time. Think about that. I'm worried about a Whippleball Park. He's proposing 100 miles, 50 miles, 20 miles.
The building I work in is 8 stories, so I like to try to take the stairs. 8 stories, like, I don't get to the gym a lot,
right?
You know what I mean? 8 stories is a lot of
yeah.
stories.
It's seven
that's,
too many.
That's a lot of stories to walk up.
Yeah.
And it's hard. And I get up there, and every day I'm like, you know, tomorrow's going to be easier, and the next day's harder than it was today. So 100 miles, you know, it may change my – I might need a quarter of milk. Because 100 miles, it's like – my fear is that I would work really hard and not be able to do it. And then I've done all this. So I got to have some sort of, like, life-changing thing. That's grand is nice.
I
it doesn't change your life. You're still going to work. The quarter of mil, now all of a sudden you start in this. You might take a little extra PTO day here.
I remember years ago I saw stand-up comic. I don't remember who it was, but he's making fun of the dudes that run marathons in the Olympics, right? Because he said they all train. Every one of them trains his ass off. And the guy who finishes last trained just as hard for the guy finished first, and he didn't need to train at all. That was his budget. Like, he didn't even need to train. He could have finished last without it. So I could put in all the work you want me to do, and I have some physical limitations that would – I'd be at mile 4 in great shape, which is going to take me about 10 years to get into. And then I'm going to go, you know what, dude? This last 46 miles is just going to have to wait.
That 96.
Yeah, I'm talking about the 50-mile one. I'm not doing that. I'm not going down to the
North
High track.
That's like 60 miles. You're like,
no.
60 miles. I'm at the border of Rhode Island here.
Yeah.
And I got to get to, you know, Martha's Vineyard or whatever we're calling.
Yeah, see, we need to put Neil up for this because Neil's a guy, as you mentioned, the latest to Neil, needs to be in good physical condition to keep his woman
on
the spot.
We've got to ask quite how far it is from the Hoboken Studios to the Norwalk Studios.
That's
way. Probably 50 miles.
Easy. I think.
Right? Because it's about 40, 50 miles to the Giant Stadium that's going a little south. Hoboken's on the other side. I think it's probably about 50 miles, Neil. We need, and we could put together. I mean, how much sponsorship money would I need for you to make a trek on foot, not stopping, with a camera on you, where I could get you from the Hoboken Studios to Norwalk in one stop? Well, what are we talking? That's the real question.
I mean, I've always liked the sound and the look of Six Figs.
Yeah, it's got 100 grand ago. Well, we got Tucci and Lumber was on CBS.
Yeah.
Maybe Troy Tulowitzki just put it up.
I think it, you know, the time to launch a Kickstarter is now.
Yeah, I think weren't you the one that told us on the show last week that a guy was like he made like waffles or something for $46,000?
Yeah, potato salad.
Potato salad. $47,000. I think we can get $100,000 if we want this guy to walk from Hoboken to Norwalk.
See, my speed would be more. Like hot dog eating contest. I'll sit down for that. Raise some money. You give us $500 hot dogs.
You, how about this?
That's 50 grand.
For however long, I mean, for him to go 50 miles, it's going to take him
a while.
A day. For 24-hour span. You have to eat a hot dog an hour. Right?
For every hour he's out there?
Yeah.
That's not a problem.
You can't stop eating the hot dogs. He can't stop walking.
Just load me up with ketchup. Raw on you.
I'll go Ryan.
I'll kill 24 out there.
Can we get a little Dutch's little chili and cheese?
Right. Whatever
we
you want.
One of those every time.
Fine.
Chili and cheese.
And I'll do that.
On the bottom.
Yeah, and we should get a running feed from Neil as he's walking, and we can watch him eating the hot dogs every hour on the hour.
Yeah, you can watch him eating the hot dogs.
Yeah, motivation.
Watch you slowly dying. One of you will die, and it'll just be me, and I'll be making the millions off the LLB deal.
It won't be me.
It'll be me and Maddie.
Those hot dogs are good.
I just need victory quad stackers at the finish line. That's all I need to think about, and that's all I need in my head. Are the quad stackers for my victory whether across the finish line.
Yeah, I'm thinking you're going to come across the finish line like Homer Simpson. I got like a tray full of Krusty Burgers, like, you know, like stacked up nice like they do in the pyramids, and you're just going to knock every one of them like some Baconators right to the face. You know? That's all I'm thinking. I'm going to put together the 100,000. I'm going to put it together. I think we can do that.
No problem. Yeah, no problem. We're already high on the odds, so let's just get the extra 100 grand.
We only need 100,000. We're not 100,000 left.
That's it.
You know the damn thing. It's 100,000 on Main Street there, Ian. Right by the Panera Bread there.
Especially in the token.
You walk around and just put a sign up, say, I want my guy to walk from Hoboken. Can you give me $1,000? Him and Holly, you left your little soul.
Yeah.
You know somebody from Norwalk?
He's a little boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do it.
You know a guy from North and Hoboken? Oh, poor you. You little poor little fool. All right. Well, Neil, due to you serious, killed it as always. thank you to Keith Danbrock for calling in. Thanks to everybody. Coach Sean Ireland for filling in as producer today, doing a great job as always. We'll see you next week. We got a bunch of good grits lined up. We're at tristatesportsguys.com, facebook.com/tristatesportsguys, and follow us, as always, on Twitter. At @tristate_sports. We are on the MLB Network, and you're listening now. You're going to be one of those guys who are like, I was on board with them back in, you know, 2011, back when Osama was the co-host, and they were interviewing Zub Mahente. So that's going to be the kind of thing that you want to do. So, all right, we'll see you next week, every Wednesday, 8:10 plus, with Tri-State Sports Guys. Thanks.